Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd ask if you'd please find a seat so we can get our meeting started. Thank you and welcome to all that got up to come to the meeting this morning. Appreciate that. This is the March 18th Board of Directors meeting for the San Luis Obispo County Fire Safe Council. My name is Frank Meacham. I'm First District Supervisor and President of the Council of Governments, and I think I'd like to introduce at this point, have the board introduce themselves.
I'm Dan Turner. I'm the Business Manager for the County Fire Safe Council.
I'm Jim Harrison. I'm on the Board of Directors for the Fire Safe Council.
Robert Lewin. I'm the Cal Fire Unit Chief and the County Fire Chief.
Steve Negro, representing the First Supervisorial District.
Greg Sines, Pacific Gas and Electric.
Ken Payne, East Citizen at Large.
Ed Wagner, Citizen at Large, Pismo Beach City Council.
Geraldine Moore, CAL FIRE Recording Secretary.
Martin Scott, representing Ranchita State's Focus Group.
Dennis Javens, representing Oak Shores Community Association.
Skip Dyke, representing San Luis Obispo Range Improvement Association.
Roy Parsons, representing the County Cattlemen's Association.
Bryce Larson, representing the University of California Cooperative Extension.
I'm Dan Dulitz. I represent the Judge Supervisor of the District.
Thank you. The way we're going to do this is we have a couple of items here to discuss, and they'll be very brief. And then after we have the presentation of the condition of the Monterey Pine Forest, we're going to have the panelists, if they'd come up here, we'll step down and sit out there, and the panelists will be up here, and Mr. Turner will facilitate the meeting. So at this point, Dan, would you introduce our next item, please?
Technologically challenged here, so let me see if I can get this to work. So I'll give you a little briefing on the Fire Safe Council for those of you that aren't familiar with it. San Luis Obispo County Community Fire Safe Council is a 501c3 not-for-profit. We're not actually a government agency. We're a not-for-profit organization. And it's made up of a cross-section of members of the community that look at fire safety in the county as an issue. You saw them introduce themselves, but to give you a sense of the organizations that are out there as citizen members, each board of supervisor has a representative that they appoint to the Fire Safe Council. Supervisor Meacham is the president of the Fire Safe Council. We've always had a board of supervisor member as our president. The County Fire Chiefs Association has representatives, the Cattlemen's Association. Eco Slow, our rep, isn't here this morning. He's traveling. Farm Bureau, Insurance Industry, Air Pollution Control District, Fire Prevention Officers Association, Cal Poly University. Our rep on the board is in Washington, D.C. today. UC Co-op Extension, PG&E, Construction Industry Rep, Real Estate Association, Rain Improvement Association, Cal Fire, and focus groups. And you heard a couple of our board members introduce themselves as focus group members. So these focus groups are grassroots organizations. And there's a Cambria focus group that are on the ground, get the work done. We handle all the administrative bureaucratic processes for grants management and environmental clearances and those things as the Countywide Fire Safe Council and give strategic guidance. That's our purpose, and then we empower the focus groups to actually get work done on the ground. So we have Oak Shores, Ranchita States, we have Barron Canyon Focus Group, having Pismo Beach, I think else Cambria, I think we're all there, scattered all over the county. Some have been longstanding focus groups. For Tascadero, for example, has a focus group that's been with us since our beginning. We were chartered in 2000, so we've been in existence for 15 years. And it's a great organization. So become more involved. Our website is fscslo.org. It's a great website. It shows all the projects that we have going on and the programs that we have, videos, and all kinds of interesting information for you if you're trying to learn more about fire safety in the county. So if we go to the next presentation. So if we could get, this is an aerial image that was done by one of your locals here. If we go back and get that aerial image to load, if it'll load. Not going to happen. Come on, internet. Nope. Okay. Okay, we're going to pass on that. Many of you, this is on our website if you want to go see it. It's about a 2 or 3 minute video, an aerial video of the Cambria Forest. And it shows the degradation of the forest vividly. And we have noticed, just looking at these images here, the Scott Rock area on the east side of Cambria from 2013 to 2015, a change of from approximately 10% mortality in the Monterey pine to 40% or greater in the Monterey pine. If you can see the images in 2013, it's predominantly green with a scattering one or two dead or red trees. If you look at 2015, we're seeing almost predominantly red trees or trees that have completely cast their needles. If you could hold them, I'd appreciate it. We're going to have a panel discussion, and that's going to be the best place for your questions. We have a panel of experts up here that I don't claim to be one. So we'll have a panel of experts up here that can hopefully answer your questions. So a couple of other things that have taken place in the last little bit is Cal Poly Wildland Urban Interface Fire Protection Course of Study at Cal Poly. These are seniors and graduate students that are in the forestry major with a fire and fuels concentration. This course is taught once a year in the winter quarter, and they learn about how to prepare a community wildfire protection plan, which is go in and look at the problem, try to identify issues that are going on, both in the natural environment, also the community demographics, and then determine recommendations, prepare a written report, and then present that written or present that report to a community group. Dr. Chris Dykus at Cal Poly leads that. He sits on our FireSafe board of directors, but he's in Washington, D.C. today, so unfortunately he can't talk about his class, so I'll try to a little bit. The group studied the Cambria area this year. The course is taught once a year. We asked them to study Cambria, and they particularly looked at the Lamert Track, Happy Hills, and Pine Knolls areas of Cambria to determine whether or not, determine if there's a problem. We kind of knew there was. We asked them to look at this, but they looked at the dead and dying pines, and they came up with an estimate of 40 to 70% dead in those particular areas. They looked at methodologies of treatment methods, and they looked at codes, ordinances, the rules that kind of oversee what we're doing here. Community demographics, they looked at historical comparisons of other fires in this type of environment or other conditions that this type of forest has faced. As all of you know, there's not very many Monterey pine forests in the world in natural settings, so there are limited opportunities to study historical comparisons. They did some fire behavior modeling, and then they looked at different kind of treatment methods. And their findings were drought is making the problem worse because a lot of the other problems, pitch canker, dwarf mistletoe, et cetera, have always been there. The drought has made the conditions significantly worse. Their findings were that we call a stand replacement fire is very possible. This would be a fire that would take out the entire stand and burn the whole stand. That's part of Monterey Pine's natural process. They also determined the firefighters would probably be overwhelmed early on if it were a serious fire, just the resources that are currently available here in the community. That trees falling onto buildings and power lines are probable. If they don't burn, they're going to fall anyway because they're dead. The road work is narrow and confusing, and then evacuations are complicated because of that road network in the community. Those aren't probably not surprising to any of you if you live here. Their recommendations on their process was the treatment of dead and dying is critical. Enhancing the public awareness and preparation is important. Enhance evacuation planning. Enforce defensible space around properties within the community. and the ultimate goal is to return the forest to healthy condition. If you get the forest back to a healthy condition, it starts to resolve a lot of the problems that are there. So that's the ultimate long-term goal. So he did some modeling. It was interesting. And the image that you see on the screen, the intent was to simulate a fire that began up here in the northeast part of the community south of in the Leimert Track area, and see what it would do. The typical model that we use is called FireSight. It's a fire behavior model. One of the challenges we ran into is it has significant accuracy problems in built environment areas where there's houses, because the model is really designed for just open forested areas. So when it hits what the model thinks as a fuel type is buildings, the model wants the fire to go out. But we know that doesn't actually happen. So we had to mess around a little bit with FireSight, but that's one of the computer models that are out there. The next thing they did was take a look at some of the other historical fires. This is kind of a dark image, but in 1987, it was a fire in Pebble Beach. The red line is the perimeter, the outline perimeter of that particular fire. It actively burned for about 3 hours in a Monterey pine forest. And burned about 130 to 140 acres and 36 homes in that time period. So it took that same footprint and looked at, this is the Morris Fire, the red up here. This is the boundaries of the Cambria Community Services District. And just overlaid the Community Services District boundary over the Morris Fire to see how it would compare size-wise to the district. And then took the boundary of the Morris Fire and laid it over the Community Services District to see, again, comparison-wise, how it would look. And then we intuitively took some of the fire behavior that we saw in the Monterey Pine Forest in Pebble Beach and compared it to Cambria, back to that Leimert Track ignition. And in 30 minutes, it was estimated the fire would be about 6 acres involving five or six homes in that amount of time. And 30 minutes is critical because that's the amount of time that the two fire stations here in Cambria are on their own. The next resources are probably not going to arrive and be able to actually deploy and start to be effective for about 30 minutes from the ignition of the fire. Depending on how quickly it's discovered, how quickly it's reported, their dispatch, travel times, and so forth, it's about a 30-minute time frame. So in 30 minutes, under severe fire conditions, those two fire stations will be overwhelmed. In an hour after ignition, as more resources start to arrive from elsewhere within the county, the fire will be larger, about 19 acres, and will involve about 15 or 20 structures, overwhelming that force. And then after 2 hours, the fire would be roughly 140 acres. And the significance in all of the models and everything we saw is that it'll also start to have significant crowning and spotting out ahead of itself. So instead of having just one fire, there's actually 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or more separate fires occurring. That's the concern that that we had in looking at this problem. That's the forecast of what the students came up with in analyzing the information that they have. So that's the Cal Poly study. Their reports are available from Cal Poly. We also videotaped those presentations that they made before the community group. We had several community members there to watch the presentations, some Cal Fire representatives, members of the CSD and so forth. Had a couple members of the grand jury were present. To watch those presentations. And those we'll load those onto our website so you can watch them. They're 20 minutes long. These are student groups. And how the class is set up is this class is broken into three groups. They're told they're a consulting firm, and their job is to prepare a community wildfire protection plan for the community of Cambria as if they were a consulting firm doing that. So they had to build it as a team project, to present it as a team project. They're learning as they went how to do it, and it's a stressful course for them. Puts a lot of pressure on them to work as a team and to present a program to a group of community members. So it was stressful for them, but I think they did a good job. So that's the Cal Poly class. So they have prepared for us a community wildfire protection plan. And then yesterday, the county grand jury released a report that they have been working on for some time regarding the Cambria Forest also. And the that report is available on their website, the county grand jury's website, to download. And essentially, the situation they determined was that Cambria faces a severe fire threat and that the drought, again, is the catalyst for the more severe threat than we've had in the past. There's increased dead and dying and diseased trees in the forest, again, drought related. There has been no large cleansing fires in the area. Students determined it was about 125 years ago was the last significant fire in the forest. Monterey pine typically don't live that long anyway, and fire's typically part of their normal life cycle. So there hasn't been a fire to introduced in that current generation's life cycle. Also determined the community needs better awareness and preparedness, and the roads are narrow and easily blocked. Mirrored a lot of what we saw come from the Cal Poly students and what many of us already know. There have been some steps taken, they identified. There's really close cooperation between Cambria Fire Department and Cal Fire, the two local fire organizations here. There has been a wildland-urban interface, WUI, fire pre-plan completed, and it's actually a copy of it's posted up here on the board. There have been some fuel breaks created in the community already, and there is some enhanced community preparedness. There's a CERT team here in the community that's pretty active. It's one of the original CERT teams in the community, and it's a good organization. Those are all good things. Their particular findings were that, again, they face a severe fire threat, need to improve evacuation planning and get communication out about it. It's not well understood. That the fire breaks need to be improved, and we need to deal with the dead and dying to reduce the fire risk. And then they made recommendations that have to be responded to by either the County Board of Supervisors or the Cambria Community Services District. And that the grand jury recommended that a state of emergency or emergency proclamation should be requested by the CSD or the county to emphasize the nature of the problem that's going on here. The CCSD should raise public awareness at local, regional, state, and federal levels. By this, the room here, I think there's some awareness going on now. Need to conduct evacuation drills. Need to campaign for reverse 911 cell phone, sign-ups for cell phones, because the landline phones, which reverse 911 will alert you automatically without any effort on your part, don't work with your cell phones unless you register them. You have to do that. That requires citizens to do that. And then the CCSD should obtain funding for forest management, and the forest management should focus on fuel breaks and hazard reduction and forest health. So that's what's taken place up until now. It's good work by a lot of parties. What we did today is that we asked several our expert panel, if you will, to join us this morning and make some presentations about the forest from their perspective, to answer questions, have a dialogue amongst themselves, and answer questions about the forest and conditions that members of the audience may have. So with that, if the board members that are up here will step down, we'll ask our panel members to change places with them.
Yeah, there's some special stuff.
Thank you.
So if I could take a moment and introduce the panel to you, we tried to put together a group that has a cross-sectional view of the problem, much like the way the Fire Safe Council is constructed, is we don't want necessarily people all of one mind. We want people looking at the problem from different perspectives to get their input and solutions to the problem. So we've looked at it from all perspectives as possible. Alan Peters, who's behind me, is going to do a presentation as soon as I finish introductions here on he's a forester from CAL FIRE, and he's going to give you his forester's perspective on the problem. We also have Bruce Gibson, supervisor from the 2nd District, here today. Mark Miller from Cambria Fire Department, Fire Chief of Cambria Fire Department. Rob Lewin, the CAL FIRE Chief. Lisa Andriano from California State Parks. And she's got her cohort with her, Vince Cicero, also from California State Parks. Joellen Butler over here from the Friends of Fiscalini Ranch and the Cambria Forest Committee. And Connie Gannon, there she's Connie, from the Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust. Wally Mark. Wally's a professor at Cal Poly, and he was also chair of the Pitch Canker Task Force here in Cambria for quite some time. Pretty familiar with the Cambria Forest. And then Justin Kephart. Justin is a vegetation management forester for PG&E. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Alan Peters and let him make his presentation. And I'll try to facilitate this as best I can.
Can you plug that thing in? Good morning, everyone. It's great to see such a large crowd. As you said, my working title with CAL FIRE is Unit Forester. Under the direction of Chief Lewin, I'm also responsible for all of our fire prevention programs, which includes the Fire Marshal's Office, law enforcement education, our pre-fire planning GIS shop, and also resource management. So what I did here, in the context of this meeting, I decided to try to build a really, really short presentation that will hopefully set a framework for this discussion. And I kind of went back, you know, we all, let's see, that wasn't me. You know, we all know we've been in a historic drought, you know, for 4 years now. But prior to that, in Cambria, you know, there's a number of issues that have been in play for, you know, decades that have had an influence on forest health and just the condition in the, you know, the local ecology. Some of these things, as you can see, the map behind this slide is represents the rare, threatened, and endangered data list that Fish and Game publishes, and this shows just the sheer number of species that are, you know, at some kind of difficulty in the area. The forest is obviously around, you know, it's a small forest. We know it's around 3,000 acres. So just the limited range is an important issue. Senescence is a very important issue. It's just the fact that the forest is old. Generally speaking, Monterey pine is a young forest type. The forest here is mature and in a state of decline. It's overcrowded. There are too many trees. Development is an issue. Fire exclusion. Preservation versus active management. You know, the management philosophy that different landowners have has an influence, and invasive weeds and other issues. Everyone's familiar with pitch canker, I'm sure, and the effect that has on the pines. The general issues are important forest-wide. Pine itself as a species has a number of problems in the area. Pitch canker's been around for over 20 years now. Dwarf mistletoe is an obligate parasite plant. It's expanding. It's a serious pest out in the forest. As a parasite, it just weakens the trees and causes them to, you know, it competes with the tree itself for nutrients and water and sunlight. Western gall rust is very common in this forest. It causes a lot of deformity and mortality. So you have all the pre-existing conditions, if you will, and then the, you know, the more endemic pests and pathogens that have been in place for all this time. Then you add this drought. Cambria, according to the drought monitor, Cambria entered the moderate drought phase back in February of 2012, and we all know it's just continually worsened. obviously, and we're in extreme drought now and probably will be for the rest of this year, according to the forecast. And what that means to the pine stand is that conditions are ripe for bark beetle outbreaks, which is one of the really common results of drought. And we think five-spined ips is the pest most to blame for what's going on currently. And this is what you get during a bark beetle outbreak. In this case, most of the overstory trees in pockets throughout the forest are being hit very hard. Dead pines. The only green you see on the horizon is a, you know, redwood, a cypress, and some live oaks. Other than that, the pines are mostly dead. So what does that mean in the long term? Of course, we're talking about the increased fire hazard. You know, as the years go by, stand replacing fire is more likely. You know, and stand replacing fire is not necessarily a big threat to the undeveloped forest, but of course, it's not compatible with a community. Habitat loss in the long term could also result if the pines continue to die and natural regeneration doesn't take place, then it's going to, you know, just natural succession is probably going to at least reduce the acres occupied by pine, or it could convert to oak and brush entirely. That would obviously change the character of the entire Central Coast. Greenhouse gas production is important these days. There's a lot of news about that topic. A dead decaying forest is probably a net emitter of greenhouse gas, and rather than the long-term carbon sequestration bank we all hope it could be. Short-term impacts are very important too, especially for you all as landowners. You know, obviously trees, there's trees throughout the town that are hazard trees to your backyard. The house on the left has six or eight trees that would reach that house if they fall. Obviously, it can fall in the house or your vehicle and cause significant property damage, or it can, you know, cause injury and death. On the right side shows some of the fire risks we're worried about. We have a large mature tree that's died recently. It's leaning over the road and over a power line. You know, it could fall in the power line and start a fire, and it could block the road so that if there is a fire, evacuations are compromised, and those kind of problems continue to compound themselves. Short-term impacts, fire hazard is a short and long-term impact. It's something we, you know, in California, we deal with a fire hazard continuously. Right now, it's just really getting to, you know, extraordinarily high levels, as Dan demonstrated previously. The more dead trees there are in the overstory canopy, the more likely crown fire is. What I'm seeing a lot in the woods are where the dead trees fall. There's a lot of the large pine trees that are falling into the oak trees, and the oak trees fall into the brush, and then you have this huge conglomeration the size of this room of just packed fuel. So but the good news is there are a number of solutions. That's what we hope that this conversation will start to address, is what we can all do. And it's great to see it'll certainly take, you know, multi-agency support, community support, and we'll all have to work together and decide what needs to be done and what we can do. We've done some of these things. There's other things are just being talked about, but you know, fuel breaks, we've done, everybody probably knows about the Bridge Street fuel break that we were involved with back in 2011. That's still in place. Thinning is a real common tactic in forests. Obviously, thinning is probably what would benefit the undeveloped portion of the forest the most, because there's just too many trees in the forest. It really needs to be thinned out. Removal of invasives. Prescribed burning is compatible with Monterey pine. Everyone's probably heard that Monterey pine is one of the many species that are considered fire dependent. So prescribed burning could be used, although it's always extremely challenging in a, you know, an environment close to town. So planting trees, cone scattering can work, collecting cone from, you know, pitch canker resistant trees and spreading those in appropriate areas. Hazard tree removal, of course, that's a priority right now. The slide on the right shows where hazard trees can also, you know, help maintain wildlife habitat. These trees were topped under a power line, and they're going to make ideal acorn woodpecker granary trees. You know, so you can do a lot of different you can meet a lot of different objectives just by thinking out what you do. The infested tree removal helps now with the bark beetles. That's kind of goes along with the thinning. Irrigation can work, although with limited water, that's obviously not a widespread thing. Insecticide can work on highly valued trees. Undergrounding is a PG&E kind of possibility that's discussed up here. And these, you know, I'm not, all these solutions, we're just kind of throwing them out there, and then over time we'll kind of see what develops. These are all just ideas, and I'm not in any way prioritizing things or suggesting what is best, but I just wanted to demonstrate there are numerous things that are available. You know, I'm sure people have seen tree climbers out taking care of the trees. It's possible that a facility like this may be feasible in Cambria. I don't know, but this is an example of a biomass cogen facility that's temporary and portable, and you know, it's possible it could dispose of all the excess dead biomass. Some of the other solutions, and many of these are things we currently do. The top bullet, enforcement of defensible space, weed abatement, and power line clearance are all things that are going now, and we hope to continue those. And this year, we're going to do more coordination and do it to a greater degree. Hardening homes is a good tactic. You know, that involves you all deciding to replace a roof or a deck with less compatible material, be more in conformance with the modern, the contemporary fire code standards. A number of fire prevention tactics, education and evacuation maps. Animals can be used in the woods to thin. You know, animals are good for prescribed herbivory. You know, there's zebras up on the Pico Creek stand. I don't know if they help maintain the forest, but they're there. goats are real effective, and cattle can be effective. I know I haven't been here. I've been here 6 years, but I know cattle used to roam the Covell Ranch and everything from what I've heard. So we can and should figure out ways to implement the existing forest management plans. There's a number of those, including the Cambria Forest Management Plan, Fiscalini. The Covell Ranch Forest Management Plan was done for the Bridge Street project. And the Fiscalini did a recent plan as well. I'm sure state parks and green space and others have other management plans as well. It takes funding to do some of these. So there's we're pursuing grant opportunities. There's other funding sources are potentially CAL FIRE crews. I'm going out later today with 3Cs, as a matter of fact, to look at work on Bridge Street that they'll start within a matter of days. The CAL FIRE crews have been, I apologize if anyone got smoke in your home, but we have been out burning piles in the last month or two. So we have been working, although not a lot of work, but it continues. You know, there's always a possibility of new legislation, I suppose, similar to what was done for the pitch canker epidemic, the pitch canker task force. Challenges are many in Cambria, and many of these hurdles are, you know, will have to be addressed. You know, just the difficult environmental regulations here and all the permitting, being in the coastal zone. Community support, as we said, is vital. A lot of the undeveloped forested areas have conservation easements, so all the work that we would hope and plan to do have to be compatible with forest, you know, with conservation easements. At this point in time, you know, from a general kind of perspective, what we suggest in order of priority, because we think it's most important to start at the homes where you all live and kind of radiate outward and prioritize the work we do. And we, And we can do some of this, you know, immediately, like defensible space. You all will be seeing us, as I said, out doing our weed abatement and defensible space inspections. You'll see CCSD and CAL FIRE both doing inspections probably in the month of April. We may come and bang on your door more than we have in past years. So that can occur right now. And the laws are in place. You know, as landowners, you're obligated to, you know, meet the intent of those laws. We can hopefully improve and maintain the fuel breaks and expand on work that's been done, you know, with Bridge Street, the Fiscalini work that was done in previous years. Strawberry Canyon has been done. You know, it's been so long, it's not really apparent anymore. And then once we've addressed the community and then we're out to the undeveloped forest, then we just have to expand and figure out what role we do to preserve the Monterey Pine Forest ecosystem. So that's kind of a longer-term strategy and you know, fairly involved. So, and with that, I will turn it back over to the panel. I apologize for taking too long, but I wanted to yield the floor back to the panel. So that's...
So with that, we'll open it up to the panel for questions or comments, and I'll kick it off here by, if I could ask Chief Miller and Chief Lewin to talk a little bit about what you've done up to today to prepare the community and yourselves, and then what you look to see happening over the next few weeks.
Thank you, everybody, for coming out. We are really impressed that we got the turnout we did here. I'm sure that all of you recognize the monumental problem that we have here for fire danger and how it outpaces a lot of our capabilities. One of the big benefits that we have in San Luis Obispo County is the cooperative arrangement with the fire agencies, automatic aid, boundary drops, that type of thing. We have full support of CAL FIRE and the other agencies in the area to draw from. One thing that's a little bit unique about the community of Cambria is our isolation. It takes a half an hour to get a lot of the backup forces in after our initial response crews are exhausted. So that's created a scenario that is of major concern, because in a forest that's healthy with high humidities in the typical conditions that you've been used to through the years, the fire danger has not been the way it has turned out after the 4 years of drought. We had fire activity. We break in a few vegetation fires here last week in March. We're supposed to be getting rain. So some of the stuff that you can expect to see here in the community for us to be proactive and to try to keep life safety as our number one priority, we've got several things we're doing. One is the awareness campaign with the community. We want to make sure we've had an evacuation plan that is a well-done evacuation plan that we co-opt with CAL FIRE to create in 2010. It's out there. We've had it. It's on the website. We've handed out at all of our board meetings. We've even included them in the water and sewer billing. We realize now that we need to interact with the community to get the message across on how all of that works. It's a document that I think has kind of gone to the wayside. People look at it, see it, it's a brochure, and it gets tossed in the round file, or it's not understandable. So we're going to have a campaign where our personnel are going to be there to assist all of the community in understanding how that document works, what it means, and how you should act if you do get a request to evacuate or if you have to evacuate. That procedure is going to be dynamic depending on the fire conditions, where the fire's at, the type of day, the weather conditions, how fast it's moving, and that type of thing. So we want to make sure that you are prepared out in front of the event and have an idea of what to do, and you're able to execute whether you need to evacuate immediately or whether you have time to evacuate in an orderly fashion. A second prong, we want to make sure that everybody here has notification capability. Obviously, we have a reverse 911 system, which is relatively inefficient due to the fact that a lot of the community operates with cell phones. And unless you have registered your cell phone with the county sheriff, you're not going to receive any kind of a notification on your cell phone. We're going to have a campaign to get people signed up to make sure that the majority of this community has that capability. We have put together, with the assistance and the hard work of engineer Emily Torlano, we have put together guidelines to do that, and we will be available to walk people through the sign-up process to get that done. Also on the table is Nixle, which is a text messaging service and an ability for us to send out notifications that we will be having a campaign, and we'll show you how to get signed up for that. There is other social media, Twitter. Cal Fire is very active with Twitter, and I would encourage all of you who tweet to get signed up and have Cal Fire's Twitter location or whatever on your phone to where you can get. So you're going to see changes in fire hazard fuel reduction program and weed abatement. We're going to be more aggressive with that. We're going to try to cover more area. At the same time that that's going on, we're going to be in cooperation with Cal Fire's crews to look at the occupied properties, the developed parcels. We need to run a full court press on removal of dead and dying vegetation from around the homes to try to get that defensible space. All of you know the challenges that we face here with defensible space due to the small lots. We are actively pursuing grant opportunities and opportunities for chipping, anything like that, to remove dead and dying fuel from in and around the occupied areas. Okay, so with that being said, I think I'll turn it over to Chief Lewin so you can get his perspective.
Okay, and I won't try to move quickly here, but just sort of a comprehensive approach, as you heard from Chief Miller. Together, the two fire departments are going to work on this comprehensive approach. So there'll be a ramp up of inspection and compliance on your properties. So in the past, we may have gone by your property, said it looked okay, and didn't make contact this year. Even when you look good, we still may make contact to take advantage of that time to do messaging with you and hand out evacuation plans. We're going to work harder with PG&E this year to ensure that their power lines are protected both from falling trees, because a falling tree hitting a power line can cause a spark, and also, of course, just to maintain power, which is critical during any kind of an emergency. We're going to work harder with county roads and Caltrans to make sure that the evacuation routes are maintained in their easements. We're hoping that with the efforts of their tree crews, that we can get a lot of work done quickly this year. We are going to ramp up on our messaging. We're looking at locations in town to put up signage that will remind people coming into the town, both tourists and residents, on that one less spark, one less wildfire. That will be our main messaging. We're going to work harder at making sure that we achieve what the department refers to as its initial attack success. The department's policy is to contain all fires at 10 acres or less 95% of the time. We have to have 100% of the time under these conditions. We cannot have a fire get over 10 acres. We have to be on that fire quickly, so I intend to instruct our crews to cover the Cambria Fire Station more quickly when those engines are off on other fires in the county or the state. During high weather conditions, I'm going to move extra resources into that station. We're going to continue to maintain the fuel breaks that we've already established, and we're going to begin new ones. Now, this is a longer process. That is not a sprint. That is a long race. It takes time to get through the process of getting new projects on the ground. We're going to redistribute, as the chief said, the evacuation plan that we've already prepared, both the one that's used for emergency responders so that they know what to do, and also to the citizens so they know what to do. We have an incredibly good relationship in this county with law enforcement, with the sheriff's office. We've talked and trained with them on evacuation. Intend to work with Chief Miller and his department on a tabletop exercise in the next few months to demonstrate our abilities and find our weaknesses in command and control of an incident in the forest. Cell phones during an emergency, it doesn't matter what kind of emergency, get impacted. They don't work, because there's only so much bandwidth on a cell site. So one of the messages we need to all be very clear about is during an emergency, we need that bandwidth to do our jobs. We need you to use text messaging as much as you can, and to not use your phones just to make contact. Use text messaging and use landlines when possible so that we can have that bandwidth. We will be moving in extra cell towers during an emergency, and not towers, but what we refer to as cellular on wheels, devices that will improve our capacity. But I can tell you that takes about 12 hours for us to do effectively. So we need your help immediately on any kind of emergency, earthquake, fire, just something eventful. We need you to limit your cell phone use and just get the word out in texting as possible. So there's many things that we feel like we can do that will not necessarily cost us more money. But there's many other things that we want to do that will cause an effort. And I'll also just conclude here with saying the county is concerned about this. There's a drought task force that Supervisor Meacham and I both sit on, as well as many other agencies in the county. Supervisor Gibson, there is no question in my mind, we have his full support to make the effort. So this isn't just Cambria's problem. I can tell you that the county cares about this problem and wants to address it. And we'll be addressing next Tuesday the Board of Supervisors to give them a briefing on the countywide drought efforts. And Cambria will be the topic of my conversation with the board next Tuesday. Thank you.
Are there any comments from the panel members directed to Chief Miller or Lewin?
I wonder if I could follow on, Mr. Turner. Thank you. First of all, thank my colleague, Mr. Meacham, and all the members of Fire Safe Council for making the trip here to hold this very important community meeting. And as listening to Chiefs Miller and Lewin talk, I'm struck by your professional response to this, which is absolutely what this community can expect, and we very much respect that. We understand that you are the front line of this issue. As I was listening to the comments here, we've known this has been a building problem for a while. Kathy Tanner was showing me a front page from the Tribune of 2004 about the potential fire danger here. It's interesting, this drought has put a magnifying glass on a lot of problems in this county, and it is incumbent upon us now to act swiftly and decisively. I think in listening to the chiefs, your focus on reducing the immediate hazard and getting the community involved in preventing a fire from starting and preventing as much as possible the damage that a fire can cause is absolutely the right thing. And indeed, as you said, I am absolutely pledged to bringing the county into this project as well. You know, the multi-agency coordination is going to be huge, even in hazard reduction. You know, I was just making a list of the affected agencies, potentially the Coastal Commission, California Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, our Air Pollution Control District, and we're really just starting a long list of agencies. So I certainly pledge my support in making sure that those coordination efforts go smoothly. I have a couple of thoughts, and maybe we'll let it get around the panel and come back here. But as you were speaking, Chief Lewin, one of the questions I have is we expect this is likely to be a difficult fire season statewide. And when a big fire breaks out somewhere, we know resources from all over the state come to do. Is there a way that we can make it clear to the statewide effort that we have a particular hazard area here that might argue for us keeping more of our county resources closer to home simply because of this issue?
Well, first let me reassure everyone that even the director of CAL FIRE is well aware of Cambria today. We have done everything to make sure that he has all the information. He's seen the videos and of the problem as well as issue papers by me. So he's in the loop, and the region chief, Dale Hutchinson, has been to the Bridge Street project. He's walked through Cambria, and he, too, understands this problem. So what does that mean? It does mean that when we do draw down our resources in this county, that we'll be putting in orders to backfill behind those. Now, we have to fight the fire we have in California. Our department does a process called move up and cover, where when there is a fire, we send those closest resources, and then we backfill behind those. When those other resources are needed that are backfilling, they move into the fight, and then we backfill again until eventually we have to go out of state and bring resources in from out of state. I will do everything I can to make sure that we have an initial attack force always in this county, as I do every year, but we know when we hit three or four major incidents in California that the resources become thin. As Chief Miller said, the relationship in this county with the other fire departments is really good, and we call upon them on every fire we have, no matter what type of fire it is, structure fires or wildfire, to help us out, and they do in the same, and we go help them. So that will continue, and we can rely on them as well. So. We believe we're there with the resources that we have in California, which, by the way, are far greater than any other state in the United States, including our air resources.
Okay, thank you. So a lot of this is related to the response component and some of it on the defensible space about the mitigation and what people can do to prepare themselves. What about the forest conditions in Wally? If I could pick on you, Dr. Mark is, again, was on the chair of the Pitch Canker Task Force, has been studying his forest for several years, and I would consider him probably one of the leading experts on Monterey pine.
Thanks, Dan. I look at the Cambria forest situation, and I look statewide, and the Cambria forest isn't the only forest around the state that's got similar kinds of problems and issues going on. When we're in statewide severe drought like we are, things that we don't normally worry about too much in terms of forest health start to rear their ugly head, I guess I'll say, and become a real problem. And once that happens, then the fuels take over and we get back into a situation of response and fuels management and people safety and structure safety and things. And it's a really tough situation. And it's kind of like when you have a severe problem and you go to see the doctor, the first thing you want is a pill so that your symptoms go away and you don't have to do anything else. And can't I just have a pill to do that? And my answer to that is I don't believe in Western medicine and I don't believe in pills. And so I have to change my lifestyle or whatever is causing the problem. And I hate to tell you, but you all do too. And forest management has, from my perspective as a forester, been ignored and sidetracked in the Cambria Forest for a long time, and sidetracked in the name of, I'm probably going to get stoned for this, preservation and conservation. And for most people, that means you leave it alone and the forest will take care of itself. But as we all know from looking out the windows today, that hasn't happened very well. So we have to take a look at where we are and what we're doing. And on several lists, I saw all these things that we need to do, and I agree we need to do all those for safety and things right now. But the bottom one on all those lists was forest health. And I'm probably biased because that's my specialty, entomology and pathology. That's what I'm trained in. That's what I work in all the time. And I like to start there. So what I think we need is a two-pronged approach. Yes, we need to deal with all this fire safety and people safety and structure safety. But if we don't do anything about the forest and the forest health and the underlying forest health conditions, we're never going to get out of this, or else we will get out of this. But all of the people who came to Cambria because they wanted to live in the Cambria pines will be living in the Cambria oaks and the Cambria French broom and the Cambria Mediterranean annual grasslands, because that's what you're going to have left, folks. Monterey pine won't take care of itself when you take fire out of the equation. All right, we have all kinds of problems that get worse with fire. We talked about a lot of those in the earlier presentation. Gall rust, mistletoe, root rot, bark beetles. And in bark beetles, the five spine dips is probably the big problem right now, but in the conditions we're in right now, we also have problems from turpentine beetle, and we have problems from wood borers that don't normally cause problems for our trees. So we have a lot of problems that have been made worse by drought, yes, but also by management decisions that have been made by the community, by the conservation groups, by the landowners, by the regulatory agencies at the behest of the state, like the Coastal Commission and places like that, that greatly restrict our management. Monterey pine was suggested for listing and went through some significant listing hearings a number of years ago. I was on the group that opposed those listings, and the reason I opposed those listings was because they could not assure us that we would be allowed to do the research we needed to do to find out the answers to come up with the management solutions for Monterey pine. So we opposed that. And most of us were on the Pitcairn Task Force at the time who were in opposition to that because we knew our hands would be tied. We did a study at Año Nuevo on management strategies for pitchcanker-infested Monterey pine, and did a group selection study where we purposefully went into the forest to try to take a forest which wasn't regenerating itself, much like the Cambria forest, and has pitch canker, has five spine dips, has all the same problems you have. And we went in and actively cut trees that were relatively healthy trees at the time to try to get rid of some of the older trees. The oldest tree we cut was 55 years old, and planted pitch canker screened trees to see what the impacts would be and whether or not we could actually regenerate a forest and get a Monterey pine forest reestablished. We're going back for the third remeasurement on all of those plots right now. And when I say group selection, that meant we made openings in the forest that were ranged from an eighth of an acre up to a half an acre to create even-aged gaps or gaps in the forest so it could create an even-aged small group of trees, which is how Monterey pine likes to grow. When you get oak, coast live oak coming in the understory, which commonly happens, you're not going to grow pines in that spot, folks. When you get French broom spreading out of people's yards that they planted as an ornamental plant because it's a nice bush with yellow flowers on it, and it grows out into the forest and takes over the site, when you have all the annual grasses that were brought in centuries ago and have replaced all of our bush or bunch grasses that Monterey pine could compete with, it can't compete with those plants. So we have a huge problem because our vegetation has largely changed, and all of this is through our past management practices. So when people start talking about not managing or preserving or maintaining the natural forest, folks, we don't have a natural forest. We have a forest that was dictated and changed by our past management practices. We need to look at those management practices and what we can do with management today to come in and do something about it. One more thing, and then I'll be quiet and we can have some questions and throw your tomatoes. But that is that Monterey pine, you know, as we've talked, is a very restricted distribution species. Three stands in California, the Cambria stand being the furthest south, the Año Nuevo stand the furthest north. And I'm familiar with that because I managed our property up there for the university for 8 years, and we have part of the Año Nuevo stand on that, so I have the same perspective about it as some of the ranchers and large landowners do here. And then the Monterey Peninsula stand. Well, all these are very restricted in distribution. And when you have a species that's very restricted in distribution, it's fragile. Okay, we all understand that it's fragile. It is all of the Monterey Pine Forest is what I would call a fringe forest, meaning that it's there, but if something happens to it and destroys it, it might be very difficult to get it back. And in fringe forests, normal tactics don't work for bark beetle epidemics. So if this is a ponderosa pine forest in the west side of Sierra Nevada, I can tell you what to do to protect that pine forest from bark beetles and pretty much keep the bark beetles out of it, even in a drought condition. Of course, if it's Forest Service land, they won't let me do it anymore. But here, all those tactics don't necessarily work because we're in a forest that's on the fringe, folks. And so the tactics that we know work where the trees are the dominant vegetation and really well-suited to that site don't work. So we've got to look at some extraordinary types of measures, and we have to realize we're going to lose trees no matter what we do when we have weather conditions or drought conditions like this. But what we need to do is we need to create a managed forest that's resilient to those kinds of losses. And we can do that, but it means that the forest isn't going to be, you know, one uniform forest that's 80 years old, which is too old for Monterey pine. The oldest one I ever measured was 125 years, but I very seldom got a tree over 80 years old. We used to work on the Pecos Creek stand a lot with the Hearst family, and I and one other person developed a management plan for them for that stand, which they really haven't done. Worked in this stand with some of the ranchers here. Worked in the Monterey Pine, the Monterey Peninsula Forest, worked in the Año Forest, so I have a lot of working experience, but it's all from a forest management perspective. It's not from, well, that's what it's from. So I'll be quiet and let somebody else talk. Thanks.
So any questions or comments from the panel members to Dr. Mark?
Yes, I'd like to respond and add, and actually I agree with a great deal of what you said, Dr. Martin. Is it on?
Green button.
There we go. Can you hear me now? Okay. I was going to say I agree with much of what Dr. Martin said, but I do want to point out that the Cambria Forest Management Plan was developed by two conservation groups here in Cambria, the Cambria Forest Committee and Green Space, and it has yet to be implemented. It was published in 2002, so we're talking about 13 years that it hasn't been implemented, and that's largely a funding issue, and that's an issue that I'd like to address with regard to the problem that we're dealing with, because I think it's really critical that more state funding be directed our way, and it's very difficult when you develop a plan and then you're unable to implement the recommendations because you can't get the grant money to do it. And if we are in an emergency situation, it seems to me that we've gone beyond the point of being grant dependent to care for our forest, that we need some kind of either a regional block grant or some kind of emergency funding to do the work that needs to be done, because we all want to keep our forests clean and healthy. We all know that Monterey pine forests are managed by fire. We all know that fire has been radically suppressed here for 120 years, and that that's part of the reason that we're facing the situation we're facing. On the other hand, we all live here, and we live here because of these beautiful forests, and, you know, obviously we can't do fire management as a general strategy for this area. So I do want to point out that we actually, all of the groups that are working on forest issues here in our community, have much more in common than they have differences. So I want to point out some things that some of the nonprofit community organizations are doing, including Green Space, Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch, and the Forest Committee. Right now we're undertaking a fog study. One of the issues with Monterey pines is that they're highly fog dependent, and part of the unusual aspect of this current drought is that there's been a radical decline all along the state, California, Oregon, and Washington, in the amount of fog that's incoming, which reduces the precipitation that the trees need for survival. And so we're right now doing a fog study, both counting the number of fog days that we're getting, examining the content of the soil to determine, interestingly enough, you can actually distinguish fog from rain by its molecular structure. And we're taking a look at the current content of the soil moisture in terms of fog and rain to try to determine some kind of baseline. Obviously, this is not an ideal time to determine a baseline, but we have to do what we can do. So we'll be working with fog. Also, we are right now in possession of 65,000 viable Monterey pine seeds from trees that thus far appear to have resisted the drought. And GreenSpace has planted 1,000 seedlings, and we have 200 that have reached gallon size and will soon be available to plant. And I do want to remind people, if you are replacing trees on your property or if you're felling trees because you're afraid they're going to fall on your house or you're afraid they're going to catch fire, you need to check with the county. If the tree is not dead, you need to check, and it is not legal to cut living, healthy Monterey pine trees. So we need to ensure that as CAL FIRE is going around and checking with property owners, that the management strategy regarding trees takes that into account. GreenSpace, in the coming year, will be offering a defensible space and invasive plant removal workshop if we get funding from the state. Again, we're dependent on a grant for that. We do have brochures now in the office that explain how to manage invasive species and how to identify them and distinguish them from native plants. We do want to try to control the fire ladder situation in the forest and on people's property. And so we offer that workshop, and it's especially useful for landscape professionals because you can actually get certified through the workshop, and then you have access to Chief Miller's list of residences, and you'll be able to actually advertise your services in the community. Let's see, I want to see if there's anything else I wanted to mention. I think that's it. I just wanted to ensure the community that all, you know, all members of the organizational community, including the nonprofits, are very concerned about this issue and are working hard on steps to ensure the safety and the longevity of our forest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me? I wanted to kind of echo something that Dr. Marks, Alan Peters, Dan Turner have alluded to. The Monterey pines do require fire for active management, and it is controversial and it is difficult, as many people in the room who've partnered with us understand, but it is possible. State Parks is managing two Monterey pine stands, one in San Simeon and a non-native outplanting of Monterey pines in Morro Bay. We have partnered with CAL FIRE and a variety of other agencies, including the California Conservation Corps, to remove dead and diseased trees, to pile them up, and to burn them as weather conditions allow. We've also partnered with Morro Bay Fire on this project. As you know, the Black Hill area in Morro Bay is surrounded by urban interface, and so the community could potentially be very impacted by smoke. They've been very supportive because they understand that if we don't go in and manage the forest, there could be a catastrophic fire that spreads to their homes. So I think that fire is a viable management solution for Cambria and the open forested stands that surround the community. And I think that if you want to preserve and protect the Monterey pines here in this community, you're going to have to consider it. That's all I had to say.
And if I might, Mr. Turner, following on, I mean, Dr. Mark's comments were very interesting to me. I've heard this as an emerging theme in forest management all over. It seems to me that one of the key things we need to do here is come to some kind of consensus of what constitutes a healthy forest. And I know, you know, over the years, there have been different schools of thought. I myself was on the board of a nonprofit, the Land Conservancy, that preserved a goodly chunk of this community, and or a very special piece of this community, and we had managed to a particular goal. So I think one of the questions we have is, do you think there's an ability to come to consensus on what constitutes a healthy forest? And I think that's certainly important in the medium to long run, but in the short term, what I'm interested in is reducing hazard right now, and we want to be sure that our actions in reducing hazard are consistent with and not fighting against some longer-term vision for what we want this forest to look like. So the question is, I mean, how long are the arguments at forestry conventions as to conferences as to what constitutes a healthy Monterey pine forest?
That all depends on the group of people that you're trying to get consensus among.
Right.
And we all know what that's like. So if it was a group of people like myself, we pretty much agree.
Yeah. Well,
if it's a group of people like in this room, we probably have the whole spectrum of this, and it would take a long time to come to agreement on it. I think that I've never heard anybody that I've ever talked to in Cambria or any place else say they didn't want the pines here and they didn't love the pines and things like that. So I think that's where we start. And what we have to do is talk about strategies that we have used to try to preserve and conserve the pines, because that's really what we want to do. I do too, even though sometimes I don't think the tactics are the right tactics that have been undertaken, and sometimes the regulatory branches get in the way of some of the steps that might be necessary for doing that. For example, when we did our research, I wanted to broadcast burn our plots. We couldn't. We were banned from using broadcast burns. We had to pile and burn. That's not really the optimum thing for Monterey pine, but that's what we did because the regulatory said that's what we had to do. Okay, so it's very difficult then, and all you have to do is start taking some baby steps about doing some kinds of things. I think a large part of the problem with, and this is my own perspective, not Cal Poly's or anybody else's, large part of the problems with a lot of the management plans is that they get bid on by some type of consulting firm, and just quite frankly, very few consulting firms have someone like me on their staff. They have a lot of botanists, they have a lot of biologists, and they have a different perspective of what management is and how to go about it than I do from 40-some years in forestry all over the western U.S. and consulting all over the western U.S. and seeing all this stuff going on. So it's very difficult to get the kind of perspective that you might need out of some of those management plans. And, you know, I always look at forest management and say, well, you know, today our forest management is largely dictated by what the general public wants because they've told us we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do that. And that's where we are, and that's okay. But I always like to turn around and say, now, if engineering was the same as forest management, the Golden Gate Bridge would be designed by a bunch of people who live in the San Francisco Bay Area, none of which are engineers. Would you drive over it?
I
wouldn't.
Yeah. So when, you know, so where I was sort of going with that, I was struck by the number of management plans that pertain to this forest, and I'm thinking that one of the things we ought to do is really get those out and see whether are they consistent, do they come to the same vision, are they all of the same depth and understanding of the issues, because as you talk about the regulatory environment, in my experience in the public service, what I've seen is when a consensus can be reached, especially among a breadth of stakeholders, it's remarkable what we can do in terms of moving regulation to accommodate a good idea. And so I'm just curious as to whether you think there's an avenue we should really be pursuing there.
Well, let me talk about another hat that I wear, which is I do Forestry Stewardship Council certifications for sustainable forestry around the world. And that's maybe one of the most remarkable sets of guidelines and principles and criteria that you probably ever find anywhere, because the group that put it together was all stakeholders. So it included timber industry, it included regulatory agencies, it included all the NGOs from around the world who had all had their own biases and perspectives, and they came to agreement of 10 principles of forest management that are used around the world and a varying number of criteria. So the way you manage a forest in California isn't necessarily going to be the same way you manage it in northern Toronto or northern Ontario, but the 10 principles are all the same, and the underlying guidelines are all the same. So maybe that's what we really need, is something like that to be developed for Monterey pine as a species. And then the management plans get checked against the criteria that we've set up that we believe as a collective group would be successful, irrespective of this piece of land or that piece of land, or is it within, you know, view of the ocean or Highway 1 or any of those other kinds of things that we have to deal with. Let's look at the species. Let's find out what's the best way to manage it, and let's bounce our management plans against the criteria that we all agree on, that we don't have a particular vested interest in, except that we all want Monterey pine to stay here.
Mm-hmm. Could I say something?
Sure.
I would just like to say that the fact that we're all here talking about the same thing speaks to how critical it is that we work together. And we've already started working together to some extent by applying for one grant, and we're working on another grant that will help us manage our forest. And management, you're right, management is what needs to happen. Not only is there the Cambria Forest Management Plan, which hasn't been implemented, we have the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve analysis and management plan, and it's largely based on the Cambria Forest Management Plan, so they would work well together. For years on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, for 15 years, we've been planting more trees, and we've been planting those trees far too close together, and we've been removing invasives, which is a good thing, but we haven't been looking to the issue of our overcrowded forest on the ranch. And there are places on the ranch that are really unhealthy with trees that are never going to live, and other places that have such old trees and unhealthy trees that they need help. They need to be removed, and they need to be thinned, and way needs to be made for new trees, whether you scatter cones, whether you plant seeds, or whether you plant seedlings. In this town, and I've been one of the people, there is a huge opposition to cutting any healthy tree. And in some places where thinning needs to happen, some healthy trees may need to go along with the unhealthy ones to make space for the new generation, just like people dying do make way for the new generations coming up. And I think the more we realize this and the more we work together to make this happen, and if we can all work together on this, it would be a great thing for Cambria. Also, we've talked about the management plans, and we'll never get these management plans off the ground without hiring a registered forester.
Yes.
And we need a registered forester for this forest. And I think it would do well for this town if Green Space, Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, the county, and CCSD, and any grant money that we can come up with, but that's kind of like way down the line. We need to come up with real money now to hire a registered forester to help us with our forest and create a healthy forest. Carlos has been removing dead and dying in the forests around Cambria on behalf of CCSD on their properties, and I was amazed at how much he's done in so little time. But we need more than that here, and working together is the only way we can do this.
I want to say two more things, and then I'm going to be quiet unless somebody asks me a question. I totally agree with your comment on the cutting of some trees. I think that right now you have a great opportunity. Okay, so that's why I would look at what's going on out in the forest, because right now you can create those groups that I was talking about and get some mm-hmm. some new areas of new trees growing without the competition, without having to cut any living or healthy trees anyway, because you've got dead clumps that have been created by mm-hmm. the beetles.
Right.
Okay, so this is a great opportunity to take advantage of that and start the regeneration process in your forest. And you have so much of that right now, you may never finish with that. Okay, so that's a great opportunity. So start to look at this as an opportunity for actually implementing some things that if the forest was continuing on in green, healthy condition, you'd never be able to get done. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I also agree on your stocking situation, is that most people want a forest that's way overstocked. I live part of the year in Oregon. We have exactly the same problem up there with our people on a lot. I consult with our homeowners association up there, and most people don't want to cut any trees, and exactly what they need to do to keep their trees is to cut some trees, because the beetles will pick which ones are going to be cut ultimately if they don't pick them. And in planting, I really don't like to see, 1 gallon pots used for planting trees out in the forest. I like to see them in what I call a pine tainer or something like that, which grows the right structure of roots to put out in the forest, mm-hmm. not those grown in a 1 gallon pot. So if you have an opportunity to grow seedlings, make sure that they're grown in the container that is made to use in reforestation, not one that is made to be used in the landscape industry. So we want a taproot on that tree that's going to go down and get to the water as fast mm-hmm. as possible and build the right kind of root structure, not one that's growing around the size of a pot. And they're actually cheaper because you don't need as much soil and the containers are less expensive. And you can grow more of them in a small area if you have a small greenhouse. So all those things are, the forest industry found out a long time ago, you don't grow millions of seedlings in 1 gallon pots. I'll guarantee you that. Okay? So think about what you're going to do for reforestation when you do it. The other thing that we did, and I don't even know if there's any data left on this area anymore or not that's any good, but we used seeds that we were open cross seeds, which means they were pollinated by nature, not by us, from trees that we had screened for resistance. So our first priority was to pick trees that had been screened for resistance and showed some resistance to pitch canker, just under the theory, since it's a multigenic resistance, that you're going to get more resistance in the offspring from that tree than you are from one that's not. We have some evidence of that, although it's not really that conclusive, but we do know that if you got seeds from a tree that's highly susceptible to pitch canker, it's really hard to grow healthy seedlings from that tree.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's more a matter of eliminating the really bad part of the gene pool than it is trying to find the best part of the gene pool for for your seeds. But you can make a lot of difference to yourself. And also on that note, you do not want to plant 100% resistant trees
right.
in this forest, because if you do, they won't be resistant very long.
Mm-hmm.
Nature has a wonderful natural process for getting around resistance if you don't make some susceptible hosts available to it. And it will do it really quickly. Okay. Fortunately, we don't have any of that stock in pitch canker like we do in white pine blister rust, but so it's not really a danger. But you can do yourself a lot of good by doing a little bit of screening for pitch canker resistance and selecting at least not the most susceptible trees to collect your seed from.
Right.
Most of the time we collect seed from the most convenient trees. Okay, we climbed for seed,
mm-hmm.
rope climbed for seed to get our seed because the trees we needed a seed from didn't have the low-hanging fruit to pick the cones off. Those were the trees we didn't want the fruit from. Okay, I'm done unless somebody asks me a specific question.
I just have a question about pine tainers. Are those the yellow cones that are about this and like this?
They come in different colors and different sizes. Okay, so if you go to any nursery supply operation like Stew and Sons or something like this, Teuwe, I think it is, you can look them up. I don't own stock in them. I buy them myself for growing trees in my little nursery that I run. And so you can buy those, and then they make different sizes, and it depends how big a seedling you want to plant mm-hmm. out in the forest. My recommendation is plant out in the forest as small a seedling as you can.
Right.
Pull out of that tube, because they tend to adapt best to the site that they're going to grow in. But That said, if you plant them out in the bunch in the forest the way it is right now, with all the annual grasses and all the invasive species, mm-hmm. and you plant them under inside the drip line of a big tree, meaning if you look straight up and you don't see blue sky or gray sky if it's cloudy, and you see green branches or dead, well, dead branches are okay, green branches, and you plant the tree there, it's not going to make it. It's got to be out from underneath mm-hmm. that, particularly with Monterey pine. So mm-hmm. if you plant it under an oak, you plant it under another pine, I say you may as well throw it on the highway and run over it because it's going to have about that much chance of success.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to see those cone-shaped growers, we have about 1,000 out at the greenhouse on San Simeon Creek Road. That's actually what we're using, the pots. That was a euphemism.
Okay. But it allowed me to make a nice point.
Right, good point.
One of the things that the Cal Poly students did in looking to some of their leadership in their course was to look at historical events that might point to solutions or circumstances that may find itself here in Cambria. And one of those that they looked at was a bark beetle infestation problem in the San Bernardino Mountains, Lake Arrowhead, Big Bear Lake area, about 10 or 15 years ago now. Same situation, community that was definitely in love with their trees. In fact, had local ordinances prohibiting the cutting of any trees. If you had a new sprout in your yard, you couldn't remove it. So the forest became overstocked. Long period drought, bark beetles came into the forest, infested the forest, and it was dying at the estimates. The pathologist estimated it was dying at 300 acres a day. And the comments were, well, what will happen to the dead trees? And they'll burn. And how many of them? All of them. So that's a little bit of the concern. I mean, that's hyperbole a little bit, but those are things that generated interest in the community to create the momentum that Supervisor Gibson was talking about, and they generated legislation, created what was called the Mountain Area Safety Task Force, brought the community together, started looking at the problem, started resolving the problem. How do you get the forest back to a healthy status to undo the failed management schemes that were in place? Some of the other experiences that we were able to share with some of the students help them on the fire protection side is, again, the Morris Fire, the Pebble Beach Fire. We had folks that were experienced with that fire that could speak to it, the Oakland Hills Fire. A personal experience with that, I was on the incident command team for the Oakland Hills Fire. Don't particularly expect to see 2,900 buildings burn in 6 hours like we did in Oakland and Cambria, but 10 houses in 6 hours is too many in Cambria. So the concerns are forest management schemes have led us to where we are, which creates some significant hazards that none of us wanted to see happen. So we have to figure out how to reverse those and get us back to that goal of a healthy forest. So having said that, there's some other players here that haven't spoken. I'm not going to let them get away with that. So Justin Kephart from PG&E, I noticed that there were comments by multiple speakers about, you know, cutting trees that are in relationship to PG&E power lines, and I know you have a program to do that, and I understand you probably get a little pushback. So maybe you can speak to what your requirements are and what you're trying to do and how that fits with the community's problem.
Yeah, so our requirements are through Public Resource Code 4292 and 4293, and then as well as should be on. Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay. Sorry. So our regulatory requirements are Public Resource Code 4292 and 4293, along with some CPUC regulations. And the California Public Utilities Commission is our regulator, so they drive most of our work, dictate sort of what we do, how we do it, because it's ratepayer money that funds the work. So our typical work would normally be an annual inspection, and we would identify any dead trees that have the potential to fall into the electrical facilities and then top or remove those trees, basically, so that they don't pose a hazard. That's something we do every year. We've pretty much finished that inspection for the year. That took place in February, and it's wrapping up, and then we'll be starting. We're beginning most of the work, and we'll be completing it within the next month or two. Our challenge is because the speed at which the trees decline, we'll go through, identify anything that's dead at one point in time, but come back a few months later and identify additional dead trees on the same property. So it's sort of a you know, a never-ending battle. The additional trees are constantly declining throughout the year. So last year, we mentioned Lake Arrowhead. So through the CPUC, when a major event like that occurs, as a utility, you can request additional funding through a catastrophic event memorandum account. And that's a lot of what funded the work in Lake Arrowhead for the Southern California Edison. And last year, with the governor's drought emergency declaration, we were successful in getting permission from the Public Utilities Commission and the Board of Forestry to do that for some additional funding for work, and that was mostly focused statewide. So what that meant is last year, during the summer and mid-season, we went through and performed additional inspections and identified additional dead trees, basically, and mitigated those to reduce the risk. And we're looking at doing that again this year. I suspect we will. We're still in the sort of planning and approval stage for what that's going to look like, but I would expect that we would be doing additional inspections throughout fire season to identify any dead, dying trees. The other aspect is the green trees. I wouldn't call them healthy, but we would identify green trees that are alive that we would believe would be good candidates for removal, usually poor form, poor health, but still green. But they have indicators of failure, so we would identify those as removal candidates. But there are some regulatory hurdles to get through or requirements to get through and needing support of the property owners and the communities to do that type of work. So in the past, we've really limited the removal of green trees, basically. But that's an option that we have, but it's something that it can be a challenge. And, you know, we really need support of the community and property owners to do that type of work. But that's something we're looking into as well.
Okay, I'm going to throw one more question out to the panel, and then we'll open it up for questions from the audience. We've talked a little bit about how we got to where we're at. We've talked a little bit about the concerns of the fire hazards that exist. So let's say that we agree that we need to do some forest management, thinning, cutting, whatever it might be. What's the best solution to deal with the dead material? What do we do with that material? We lop it and scatter it, chip it, burn it. I mean, all different host of options available to us, but what's the best solution for management of that material? Put it into a cogeneration plant. I mean, there's several discussion items that have come forward. What's your view on that?
Well, I think there's a variety of questions to ask there. How much dead material do we think we have?
A lot.
Do we have enough dead material to run a cogen plant in this community?
Yep.
Temporary. Is it temporary maybe? Yeah. Is it cost effective to get it from where it is to where it would be generated? I mean, those are, I see those who know the forest better than I shaking their heads. You know, would we tolerate the truck traffic on the roads bring Cambria back to the glory of the 1870s when it was slab town, right? So, I mean, those are the questions to me. Mm-hmm. Then the other set of questions, which may play into the ability to get this funded, is you know, what's the carbon footprint here? What's the greenhouse gas footprint? And does that provide us opportunities to seek funding as a greenhouse gas reduction strategy, and I know there's some thought regards that as we go forward.
Yeah, actually, right now we are going forward with a proposal that involves both thinning and clearing and cogeneration. And the cogeneration that we're looking at would be a temporary facility. And so far, the evidence from cogeneration plants is that they actually produce less carbon than natural decay, leaving the dead and downed wood in the forest. So that would be my response to the carbon issue. The truck traffic issue, you know, I think if we're working with a local cogeneration plant and bringing in local material, that minimizes the truck traffic coming up and down the highway. Obviously, there'll be an increase for a period of time in the town itself. And you know, these are things that, that the group that's preparing this proposal in conjunction with FireSafe that we have yet to discuss. And Dan and Rick and I are meeting this afternoon actually to talk about some of these issues. So, I mean, cogeneration would get my vote just because we have this huge mass. And, of course, we'll have to have some specific facility that can use the energy that's produced. And one thought that's been floating around is the schools. But I don't think there's been a conversation regarding that yet. So,
My colleagues, the other unit chiefs and the rest of the state have some problems also. I mean, the Southern Sierras are, as the professor said, are also impacted by this drought, especially in the central part of the Sierras. And so, you know, they have an advantage over us is because they have mills. And people that have trees that have died in their own private yards can actually sell their tree for several hundred dollars or some amount to the mill, and someone will come out and cut it. We don't have that. So the question, I think, before we get to what do we do with the fall, we got to figure out how to get it on the ground. And so let me throw out some ideas here. If you have a dead tree on your property, you're going to have to pay to get that tree taken down safely. That could be $1,200, $1,800 a tree, depending on how big and where and what. We have crews that you've seen working in your community for many, many years. I know, even when I was a crew captain 100 years ago, I was in this town on the Fiscalini property, and we were doing field treatment projects. And then we still had the problem of what do we do with all of this? We were cutting some of it up and putting it on the road for hopefully locals to burn as firewood. Well, most people don't burn firewood anymore in their homes. We had chippers, of course, then, but you can't wheel a chipper down a steep slope and be effective with it. So we burned quite a bit of it, and we got a lot of complaints about smoke when we did that. And we continue to do that, and we continue to get a lot of complaints about smoke. So my point is that, and cogen, if we did a cogen plant, how are we going to afford to pay to have those logs or that product brought to that cogen plant to be burned? And will it be profitable enough in generation of electricity to pay for that? And so I throw this out because all of them have issues. All of them are problematic, and most of them require a lot of labor, that tolerates poison oak, frankly. I mean, when I was on that project, I had 6 months personally of poison oak, and it is just not an experience even homeowners want to participate in. So we have a lot of problems. I don't mean to be the naysayer, but we have to do, I guess my answer would be, we have to do all of those things. We have to approach the ability to chip. We have to do burning. We have to do using mechanical chippers. And we need the homeowners to start and take care of their forest to make sure they have a healthy forest. And I do personally agree that we need, when you do that, you need to think about planting seedlings in your own forest, the one that you manage, which is your property.
I had one question, or I'll form it in the form of a question. The Monterey pine that's in this area obviously has the pitch canker. Does it have any intrinsic value for lumber or logging that could be milled and sold? A thought that I had that came to me from one of the local contractors in the area that I thought had some merit was helicopter logging of some of the dead trees. So I'll just throw that out there, and if I could get a response from that, if that's a viable option.
Well, I'll make some comments. I'd say helicopter logging is possible if you get a huge grant like they got in Southern California, because it's going to cost you thousands per acre to treat your land instead of a few hundred per acre, maybe. And it can be done differently, I believe, and I think the Southern California could have, maybe not at the time that they did it, but that's what I'd like to see this community and other communities like this get into, is an active management program where we never have to treat, what are there, 3,400 acres of Monterey Pine in this community, mm-hmm. basically all at once. That's terrible to have to do it all at once, mm-hmm. especially if there's no value that you can get out of it, when you could have paid for all of that management with some judicious management that everybody agreed was for the overall long-term benefit that everybody wants to keep the trees. Okay, so as long as we have that as our underlying goal, we're okay, I think. Now, that said, when we did our study up at Swanton, we ran into the same issue. We had a lot of material to deal with. We did three options with our material, and not that this is the solution, but it was a solution that we used. We lopped and scattered on some of our plots because we wanted to see what the impact of all that debris would be for material that we could not mill into lumber. We piled and burned material on plots for material we could not burn in or mill into lumber. We hired a contractor with a portable sawmill to come to the sites where our logs were, and we had that portable mill 4x6s for fence posts, basically. Mm-hmm. And then we bundled all that up and sent it over to a treatment plant in Fresno and got it back as treated 4x6 fence posts. And I'll guarantee you, Monterey Pine makes the best treated fence posts in the world because the treatment, if you ever bought a treated piece of lumber at a lumber yard, the stuff that's brown or green when you buy it, when you make a cut in it, what color is it in the middle? Still white, because the treatment never made it all the way to the center. If you have a 4x6 Monterey Pine post treated and you cut it, it will be green, like ours were anyway, all the way to the center. And it's because of the wood structure, which I worked on my master's, which is called bordered pits, and they don't close when the wood dries out in Monterey Pine, so the material can penetrate all the way to the center. In Doug fir or true fir or other pine, they close. So it's a big difference in the way the wood responds. My project was paid for by the treatment industry because they were interested in that kind of stuff, you know. So there are options of using the material. So in a community like this, maybe you end up with a collection yard for logs, and somebody with a portable mill contracts to mill those into 4x6s. When you get a truckload, you ship them over. The people who are running the collection yard and helping pay for the stuff, sell those things. Okay, treated lumber. Have you bought treated lumber at a lumber yard lately? It's the most expensive lumber you're going to buy, probably, unless you're buying specialty wood for woodworking or something like that. So you can sell those posts, and they're super for yard projects, gardens, fences, benches, whatever you want to do, underlayment for decking, anything that's going to be in contact with the ground, anything that's going to get repeatedly wet. You might not want to sit on it. You might not want to put your garden bed in it. But for all other uses where you need long-term stability of wood in contact with the ground or outside, it's the best stuff there is. So there are options. I think a cogen plant, maybe you can work up some partnerships. Look at all the growth in the industry of the vineyards around. They have lots of prunings. They have tons and tons and tons of woody material every year that a lot of it ends up being laid on the ground or scraped up and piled and burned locally. We don't have much of an almond industry anymore in this area, but there used to be a big one. So there are other places that have wood waste also that you might be able to partner with. Chipping and using it for landscape mulch is a good thing. Since you already have pitch canker here, you don't have too much of a problem or issue using that material in this community. I wouldn't want to see you ship it out of this community to anybody else to use for landscape mulch because you're going to ship your pitch canker with it. But for local use, it's fine. Keep in mind, that's a fuel also, although on the ground, in contact with the ground, as long as it's not too deep, it's not too bad because it's going to be slow spread, but you don't want to put it up against your building or put it under your deck or mm-hmm. something like that. So you still have issues with that. Thinning is not the answer, in my opinion, because thinning does not create the situation that Monterey Pine needs. If you have a healthy forest that's overstocked and it's young, yes, sure, go ahead and thin it. But if you have a forest that's, you know, 80 years old, thinning is not going to benefit that forest, folks. you can get rid of some of the invasives, you can get rid of some of the ladder fuels out of it, that'll benefit it. But if you want to get that forest, you're going to keep that forest, you're going to keep it by doing that. And then when it's time, you're going to start that forest over by creating a gap in the forest so that there's enough light and enough lack of competition that the trees, Monterey pine we're talking about, can actually grow and thrive in that situation. Okay? So there are lots of options out there. I think the portable cogen plant's a great idea if you can get Justin's company to allow you to hook into the grid here and sell that electricity back to them. That's the best thing that you're going to have for an opportunity, and maybe they would as a community-type spirited project. If it was a long-term commercial application, they'd have many more concerns about it.
If I could just reinforce something Chief Lewin said, which I want to be sure my identification of these questions was not intended to say, no, we shouldn't do this. We have to do the best we can, and that is going to cause impacts on this community. And this is not a profit-making business. This is a hazard that needs to be reduced, and there will very likely, in fact, let's assume, there's going to be a cost that's going to have to be borne by those who benefit. If we can mitigate that cost with some useful product, whether it's electricity or treated lumber, fine. But to me, we've got to look at the unique characteristics of Cambria logistically and do the best we can economically, and like Chief Lewin said, probably do a whole bunch of different things to get this thing solved.
Okay. I could listen to it all day, and maybe some of you could too, but I know there's questions that you want to ask. So, Greg, if I get you to get that portable mic there, we'll try to come around to you and let you ask questions of the panel.
Dan, your mic, is your mic off?
How do you stand up to that one?
Okay.
My question is, what do we do as individual homeowners? I've got half a dozen, 30-foot trees that are now dead. I can't afford $2,000 a tree. I mean, I can drop them on my own property, but it'd be nice if there was, chipping service or whatever to get rid of them. So, and I can't, or do we just leave them? That doesn't sound like the right thing to do when there's a high fire danger.
I'd like to comment on that question. Our ordinance for clearing of vacant parcels and CAL FIRE's LE-100 PRC 4291 regulations will require that the vegetation be removed. We are going to ramp up our enforcement of trying to remove the flammable vegetation, dead vegetation that's on the ground in the forest this year, to try to catch up with we're so far behind the curve right now that we're going to have that happen. To try to ease the pain on that a little bit, we're going to see about running multiple chipping services this year, at least two or three, and then any kind of assistance that we can offer. Some of that stuff gets too big to put into a chipper. It has to be either taken down to a tub grinder or cut up and used as firewood or repurposed. We're going to be challenged, but it's something that we have to get started with because we've allowed it to get to the point that it is to now. Now it's at a crisis situation. Do you have anything you want?
I think this is one of the unique things about this particular experience of so much dead, dying forest that we haven't had in previous conditions with, say, pitch canker in this community. Because what's changed is in any one of our literature, if you pick up and it, how to defend your house against a fire, we'll often say make sure that in the area near your house you're irrigating. Make sure you're keeping your material trimmed back. And of course, you folks have lived through an emergency already. You're continuing to live through an emergency, which is the water crisis that you have. And that's forced you to not be able to do exactly what we wanted you to do, which was to irrigate those trees. And so you have a double whammy on this, and I feel your pain. So we are not allowed to put down government funds to help individual property owners. What we can do is we can use government funds to provide a community benefit. So that's why we can do a Bridge Street project, because we're putting in a fuel break that benefits the whole community. That's why we can do chipping days, because if we reduce the hazards on everybody's yards, we reduce the community threat. So what I think I'm going to offer here is, like Chief Miller saying, is that we'll try to look and see if we have the funds, hopefully through Fire Safe Council and some others, that we can ramp up our chipping. And I know there are chippers. They're different. They're more expensive. That can handle larger material. But again, sir, as you said, you're probably going to be responsible to be able to at least get that material on the ground and out to a road where we can, you know, try to come up with methods. And I think we need to look at that as a Fire Safe Council on how we can change maybe the way we've been doing chipping here for that particular problem. But I guess I'd even offer up to maybe Alan or Dan. Do you can add more on that part of the chipping or anything specific?
Well, Fire Safe Council does have funds that we've allocated, grant funds that we've allocated for chipping countywide, and we have some of those designated specifically for Cambria. We've had chipping events up here in the past, and we have funding for chipping in the near future. Some of our grants also address that and also address the possibility of removing hazard trees. And hazard trees are those that are deemed to be a public nuisance, a tree that may be on private property, but if it's such a hazard that if it were to fall, it may fall across power lines or some other critical infrastructure lines. It may cross a road and block access or egress. It has to be a public nuisance rather than just a tree. So it's a real fine line, and it's weaving through the regulations of gift of public funds versus community benefit. So it's a fine line that you have to weave through there. But we're aware of the problem. It's just a matter of trying to get the funds, the color of the money, to be able to reach to the problem. And that's our challenge. The Fire Safe Council grapples with that every single day, as how to make the color of the money that we have reach the color of the project that needs to be dealt with. I don't have a good solution for you. One of the things that we did discuss is there are many community service clubs that all have charitable efforts of one type or another. Your community is in a crisis situation. Perhaps you could appeal to those service clubs to set aside their primary charity for a year and work with some of their local community members that have desperate needs to remove hazard trees but can't quite afford it right now.
Hi, I'm Tim Windsor, and I have a state legal green waste dump facility north of Cambria at the Warren Ranch. I've had it for years and years. Most contractors and people bring the stuff out there on a daily basis, pay a tipping fee, and we have a big tub grinder come in once or twice a year and grind up the small stuff. The big stuff, the logs, the pile is probably as big as this building now. It's coming in every day. I don't know what we're going to do with it. It's getting worse by the week. I guess we can't haul out of town. We've thought of different ideas. The post idea might be an idea, but I don't know if we can haul the post out of town to Selma to get them treated. The cogen would be great. We have like 4 or 5 acres out there. You know, give me a call, anything. I mean, if somebody wants to come get firewood, they're welcome to it. It's going to be a real problem for us at the end of this fall because the pile is growing daily. Unbelievable.
Hi, my name's Don Canestro, and I manage 225 acres of Monterey Pines just to the south of town. I work for the University of California, Santa Barbara, and it's part of the Ken Norris Ranch Marina Reserve. I just want to provide a little different perspective on its undeveloped plot. For the last 12 years, we've been collecting data on four different transects and different size structure stands, and I'm seeing a very healthy forest in one sense. Admittedly, the drought's taken its toll, especially on south-facing slopes and areas where the forest had expanded back in the late 1980s. But if you walk through the forest, and I invite you to come, you can see multi-level phage classes coming up, and it looks actually quite good. So I'd like to say there is a chance for things to keep going, and it's not all disaster. It's definitely a dynamic, stable state. We've had years of lots of little baby seedling trees coming in and growing up, and then obviously this year there's a lot more death, but there's some hope. And I do have 12 years of data. And the other thing I want to push, if you do get money, it'd be great to do some more monitoring of this stuff, because I hear all this sort of scare tactics type stuff, and it bothers me, but there's no baseline data understanding. When I arrived here, that pitch canker was like that, and I said, well, how many trees are being born? How many died before? And there was no data for that, and there's still. So that's the reason I started my project on that stuff. So I thought I'd share that with you. And then my other question is more of a, Wally, for you, is the organic stuff. So when you ship all this organic stuff out, how does it get back into the forest? Have you just depleted a certain amount of organics, and so then your forest is not going to be as healthy in the future because you don't have all the organic matter there? I don't know the answer to that one.
Depends what you ship. It depends what you ship. If you ship the tops, you have a problem with your forest in the long term if you keep doing that, because that's where all the nutrients are. If you're chipping branch wood without the needles on it or larger stems, basically you're chipping cellulose and lignin, and it's carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, and that's not a problem.
My name is Mihaela Burton. I'm a resident. I live in Cambria Pines, Alan. Firstly, I'd like to thank Cal Fire for the excellent job they did 3 years ago when they did clean up the Cavell Ranch. Even though they had great opposition, they forged ahead, and they came a few weeks ago and burned, and that was very successful. It was dead wood. It wasn't recently fallen wood, so that it was softer, and it burned quickly, and I would welcome them back at any time to make more rings, and I'll watch them until they go out. If people have a problem with the smoke, they're just going to have to buy room purifiers. This is an emergency, folks. We've spent half of this day talking about future management. Right now, we have an emergency. Look around this town. Look in the hills. Drive up Cambria Pines Road. Start down at the highway and go out to Catherine. I counted 200 dead trees in 50 feet. These are all on private property. These are large parcels. Somebody spent a lot of money buying those parcels. There has to be some way to force homeowners to start either borrowing the money, declare the emergency under FEMA that our Chief Miller suggested, so that people can get low-cost loans. But every house in my tract has dead trees. I cut down three a few days ago. Three more died overnight. I don't know if it was beetles. I can't tell. I thought it was drought. The ranch below me, it's dead, dying, dying, dying. And this is where a forest fire will start, because we had one in my yard. Started on the vacant lot next door, started with grass, it went to broom, it went to my dry fence, and it went right up to giant living pine trees and caught them on fire. It wasn't a crown fire. Cal Fire came. They had to cut through two fences to get to it, but they put it out immediately because there were no other fires. That's what can happen. My neighbor next door, and I don't know if he's here, I hope he watches the video, he has giant broom plants. They're huge. They're as big as this area in here. I guess he thinks they're gorgeous flowers. They're growing right next to my dry wood fence. It's just an ordinary fence. All fences dry up. Isn't there some way to go in and give a fine if people aren't cutting down their broom? By now, everyone in Cambria should know that broom is not a ornamental plant. It should just be eradicated. Thank you.
I just want to return to what the first gentleman was speaking about and has continued to come up, and which is the fact that there are a lot of people in this town that are they might be real estate rich, but they are cash poor, and being able to afford it, they want to take down the trees that they know are dangerous, and they just don't have the money or the wherewithal to figure out how to get the money to do it. The other challenge that happens here is there are a lot of empty lots that are not built on, that have trees that are dead or dying, and those absentee lot owners don't really care to do anything about addressing that issue. And I don't know how we get to those folks and try, because people that live here, it's clearly, it is an emergency. People that live here want to address it. Even if they don't have the money, they want to figure out how to do it so they can address it. But the people that don't live here, that own lots, I don't know how we get those folks involved. It seems to me those are the two biggest challenges when you're dealing with managing the forest. And I would very much like to thank the Fire Safe Council for coming and providing this discussion, and I hope that it continues, because I think it's an important discussion to have so we can take action and address the dangers. I'm Amanda Rice. I'm speaking only for myself. I'm on the CCSD board. I'm also a member of the Forest Committee.
Yeah, I'm Jerry McKinnon. I live in Cambria for several years. I'm taking notes in the back of the room on my coffee cup. I got reminded of the old expression of where the rubber meets the road and where the splinters meet the finger. If there's going to be a follow-up meeting, I would suggest that you contact and get a representative from Davy Tree Service, Buddy Campbell, Blair McCormick, Dennis White, who have had hands-on experience managing the trees in this community. I think they could give you some excellent examples of what to do, what not to do, when to do it, where to do it, how to do it, and why to do it. Because these men and their organizations have done it, and they could give, I'm sure, some excellent counsel and advice. One other thing. Could these organizations be combined into a nonprofit organization, a 501c, write letters asking for donations, all that kind of stuff? It's just another way of solving a problem. Maybe it would work, maybe it wouldn't work. Thank you.
So let me just, great ideas, and certainly, and we have had relationships with the different, with Davy Tree and others, and PG&E certainly does as well. I think they're still your contractor, right? One comment I want to make is we do have a 501c, it's Fire Safe Council. The Fire Safe Council, I think, is $1.2 million in grant distribution around something. So they're, you've got a really solid organization that's been around for over 15 years now that can take on a lot of, and they do hire private contractors to do much of the work. Even on the Bridge Street project, there were certainly our inmate fire crews up there and our engine companies, but there was also private masticator chipping, mechanical chippers that were in that project as well that were funded through grants from the Fire Safe Council. So just some other background, but good comments, sir. Thank you.
Kermit Johansson, Cambria resident, has to do with one is a question, both are questions, one to the county. They control the issue of two tree replacement for every one tree taken out. And I'm just wondering, at this time, is this something that should be suspended? Do you really need two trees with declining water rates and, understory coming up in a fire environment? Should that be voided at this time, for a couple of years anyway? The second one has to do with PG&E. It's an issue I've kind of chased around a little bit with the Friends of the Forest, Cambria Friends of the Forest, and talked to PG&E, and they point to the people of Cambria as the ones that won't let them cut trees down, so the practice is to top them. And so you see under a power line a lot of ragged trees. It would probably make more sense to judiciously remove a lot of those trees and directly underneath the power lines, and also make sense to bury some of the power lines, especially 12 kV and 6 kV in the smaller areas, because it's easy to do, it's fairly cheap. then you don't have to keep chopping down the trees. So the question I guess I have of PG&E, you've been marking the trees. I see lots of little trees with two red dots, blue dots, dots, and there's a secret code somewhere. And is that yours? And what are you going to do with those dots? So I guess that issue of regulatory conflagration, where I go to the Friends of the Trees, the Tree Council, I guess, Cambria Tree Council, and we try to get the county representative over, and he says he's taking care of PG&E, and the same issues seem to perpetuate and never kind of close on it. So, and I believe that's Art Trinidad, the county person who has not attended, nor do we, can we move this issue to where there's tree removal and avoidance of the topping? Thank you.
So let me respond on the permitting and the regulatory aspect. That's where I think the county can be the most helpful in this. We've got responsibilities for fire protection with the agencies that are over to my right. But I've already opened the conversation with our planning department about the tree removal permitting. For instance, we found out that a dead tree does not need a permit to be removed. Great. If there are other trees that need to be moved, I'm all about the question of how can we make this as fast, as least expensive as we possibly can. And so that's where I see our role is a lot in this interagency coordination and trying to streamline our whole process. So we're absolutely on that right now, trying to figure out what we can do. PG&E's code, I don't know.
I can maybe address a little bit. The secret code, I guess, isn't exactly a secret. It's usually different colors each year for our annual inspection, and the two dots usually mean that it's a dead tree that we're facility protecting, topping or removing, versus one dot would mean that we're pruning it for growth. And in regards to the topping, I completely agree. I think that we promote right tree, right place, and we would prefer to remove a tree that's growing under the power line. We're completely in agreement with that. But we don't necessarily have the right to remove it. And if the property owner doesn't support us in removing it, our only option is to trim. So we try to work with the property owners to remove them, but ultimately they have to support it. And I think a lot of the community supports the work, but sometimes there are individuals who don't.
Good morning. I would like to thank the grand jury for the investigation that brought us to this meeting today. I would also like to thank the SLO County Fire Safe Council and the Cal Poly Wildland Urban Interface Fire Protection students for their study of Cambria's dire forest situation. This isn't just something that has arrived upon us today or last year or the last several decades. It's been ongoing. We've seen trees dying for a very long time. But it is wonderful to have all of you, experts and government officials, fire chiefs here today. Dr. Marks, I really appreciated what you brought here today to us because you have a very realistic viewpoint and history expertise that you've shared with us today, which I greatly appreciate. When I was up in the Monterey Peninsula a year ago Christmas, I couldn't believe the difference in the state of the Monterey pines there and the forest. It's been cleaned up, and it looked healthy despite being in a second year of drought. Here, we've had a forest management plan put in 13 years ago, I think it was. What has been done? Virtually really nothing except planting of seedlings, but the forest itself is a devastation, and it is absolutely open to a humongous fire with the dead brush, the dead wood, and of course the issues with pitch canker and bark beetle. I think that, this has been a good discussion, but this is a serious, serious situation, and it needs to be addressed, I think, very much so at the state level. We maybe have Cal Poly and we have the CCSD fire departments, but as we know, it would take half an hour to an hour to get resources to us to help in if we had a forest fire. Now, while property owners have been mentioned here, yes, they are responsible, but we were talking about a forest fire that would initiate in spark about 10 homes or 6 to 10 homes within just minutes from a forest fire. So it seems to me that what is needed more than anything else is money. Money that in a dire emergency, which I believe we're in with the state of our forest, there has to be some work, and it should have already been begun, but to get major dollars to this community for a project that is sorely needed. Thank you all for being here. This is the best thing that's happened since I think it was Captain or Chief Levin. Didn't you do a presentation about 5 years ago here? Yeah, and it was excellent. But now we're in a different, and even we're in a different situation, more so than then, and we need to start addressing it very seriously. Thank you.
We were here, I remember, for a pitch canker, maybe more than 5 years ago. But one of the things that our forester, Alan Peters, who is a registered professional forester, has pointed out is that the normal mortality in this forest is about 5%, right, Alan? And maybe the other foresters that have, and maybe the forester from Santa Barbara, University of Santa Barbara could speak of that. But we're seeing 40% mortalities forest-wide and growing, and some pockets that are 90%. So while we thought we had a serious problem before, we have a serious, much more serious problem now.
And Dan, if I could, I'm afraid I'm expected in San Luis Obispo here yesterday. I mean, but I'll turn the county representative seat back to my colleague, Mr. Meacham. But I did want to leave y'all with just a couple of thoughts here. First and foremost, my main interest is in reducing the hazard. We need to get through this dry season. I'll do everything we possibly can to do that. Seeking funding, working with the Fire Safe Council, absolutely. We do have county representation in Sacramento and in D.C., and we'll work all possible avenues of that. Really getting our handle on the threat here is the first issue. Also commit to making sure the county's own regulatory process is as streamlined and as, again, cost-effective as we possibly can, and work with all the different agencies that are involved. And I know we can do it. The last thought I'd like to leave is that this is going to require the community to buy in here. And I think we have to expect that there will be some amount of community cost to get this done. And beyond that, we need the emotional or psychological buy-in that there is change that is going to have to come to the forest in this community. And that's going to, that's going to require some difficult conversations. It's going to require accepting things that are operated differently than they are today. It's probably going to require accepting some short-term nuisances. But, you know, I think we need to keep our eye on the big picture, which is the preservation of this forest, the preservation of life and property, and to work with this as a community, I think we can be successful. So with that, I thank you for the opportunity. I'm sorry for the early departure, but I do have to hit the road.
Well, thank you for your closing comments, and we're going to close the public questions because as a moderator, I'm 10 minutes over already. So we're going to need to return this back to the Fire Safe Council board, and I would like to thank our panel. You've been great, and good insight and good information. So if I could ask all of you to give them a round of applause.
Okay, we're going to reconvene our board meeting at this point.
Through this quickly because I got to get out of here too.
what we have is a discussion about
Okay, folks, we're going to get started with our FireSafe Council meeting. We still have a number of things to go through, so if you want to carry on a conversation, I'd ask you to either do it outside or kind of wait for a second. So with that, we're going to move into item number 5, which is the status of grants available for Cambria projects. Again, folks, we've got a lot of business to continue with, so please, if you'd take your conversations outside, if you would. Thank you very much. Mr. Turner.
All right, if I could get item number 5 projected. Part of what we've been talking about is grants. There was a lot of discussions about grants. And we have quite a coalition that's been put together here in Cambria to look at different grant sources, the displayed up on the wall up there. It's all of the community affinity groups that are focused on the Cambria Forest and have various perspectives, but we've come together to try to resolve this challenge. And I'll give you a quick rundown of some of the grants that we've applied for and our levels of success, and then some that we're still in process on. If I could get that to advance, which I can't for some reason. There it goes. Okay, we started back in 2014 with a Western Forestry Leadership Council grant of $300,000. We brought the groups together. It was kind of our formative process. We were not successful in that grant. There were 3 of them funded in the western from the western states. We were number 4 in position for that, unfortunately. We also applied for CAL FIRE State Responsibility Grant funded grants, $460,000 grant. We were invited to phase 2 of that, but we were just notified we were not funded for that grant. We were not successful in that grant. We also applied for, through CAL FIRE and the Air Resources Board, for greenhouse gas reduction grants, 2 of those. One was one for $1.6 million. We're still pending notification on that one as to whether or not we'll be invited to the next level for review or not. The second one that we applied to on the greenhouse gas was a $900,000 grant, and we have been invited to the second level review on that particular grant. And that one is tied to forest health, specifically tied to forest health as the source of funding. We won't know on these whether we're successful or not for probably another 60 days. The application's not due until April 30th. And then there'll be a time period of the reviews and so forth on that. So my guess would be around the 1st of June, middle of June, we should hear on the greenhouse gas grants whether we're successful or not on those. Yes.
Dan, is there any indication from them why they said no?
Chief Lewin may be able to address that, but I did look at the list of successful SRA fee projects in the state, and the request we put in would have been the highest single award if we had been awarded it. The highest currently was $450. Ours was a $460,000 request. And there was some apportionment that went on, and I think Chief Lewin's probably better to address that as to how they apportioned those grants statewide. There was $9.5 million available statewide. We applied, as the San Luis Obispo County Fire Safe Council, applied for 2 grants under SRA fee funding. We were successful in one of those grants for $323,000 in the Santa Margarita Park Hill area to continue some extensive fuel break work we've been doing out there. And that's a very volatile part of the county for fire. It has a significant fire history. but we were not successful in the Cambria one, which had we been, we would have taken about 10% of the total funding available statewide, so that might have had something to do with it.
I can only add that while we spent a lot of time this morning talking about Cambria, there's a big county out there with a lot of mortality in our brush and a lot of mortality in our oaks that is also contributing to the fire threat, both on federal public lands and, of course, on private lands. So we still have to keep our eye on Park Hill, and that's, I think, what happened with this grant is that is a really important project as well. We were only going to get one grant. Because they are being doled out, and Alan might have more details if you want to talk to him afterwards, but each unit, if you will, was given one grant, and we're a relatively large amount of SRA fee payers, but there's bigger ones like San Diego and San Bernardino, et cetera, and they got more based on that more people are paying into the fees. So there was some equity that was balanced out in it. I don't think we should feel slighted in about not getting the Cambria one. I think we're fortunate we got the Park Hill one.
Rob, if I could, you know, you mentioned, I know that there's a lot of competing areas that are looking for funding. Is there any type of, a decline in forest throughout the state that we're seeing that can be suggested in terms of percentages or?
Well, this last summer, we weren't thinking we were going to be thinking about this right now. I mean, this has really come on quickly in visually, and that is also the case in the central and southern forests. So the central Sierras, southern Sierras, and the Cleveland and the San Bernardino National Forest are also seeing impacts from this drought. However, there's no question that Cambria's forest is particularly bad, even with higher percentages of mortality. So, yeah, it's a statewide issue, and we're not the only game in town here. Yeah.
Steve, I didn't mean to interrupt. Did you have anything further? Oh, okay.
Okay. Up on the board is the criteria for the greenhouse gas reduction grant that we still have pending that we've been invited to submit an application for. It was a $900,000 request. It's a 5-year grant period, a performance period. And the primary goals are really to improve overall forest health. And again, this, as the panelists discussed, if you can get the forest back to healthy, it starts to solve all the other problems. So that's the goal is that. And it has contained within it components to address the forest health. Again, we won't know on this grant till probably June or so.
Larry, did you have something?
Well, I don't know. I can't say that good chance, Roy. We were invited to the second level on the Cambria SRA fee grant and did not get it. So we haven't been eliminated. That's good. So that's one step. So I think we have definitely caught the attention of the folks that may be deciding on these grants. So we can hope for that we have a lot of work to do to put this application together, to word it right, to make sure that we do it properly, to make a compelling case.
Here's the director of the Air Pollution Control District. Larry, did you push the little button on the bottom?
All right. Thank you. Larry Allen with the Air Pollution Control District. We are working on this issue right now with the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association. We have established a greenhouse gas registry within that and are currently developing protocols to generate emission reduction credits from greenhouse gas reduction projects. And one of the first ones that we had approved took 7 years worth of work was a biomass to fuel project. And so and it's being used right now up in Northern California right now to take dead and dying trees and get them to biomass facilities, and you can actually generate credits for them. And so I would be happy to work with you on your grant. We have a lot of contacts with the Air Resources Board on this specific issue and with other air pollution control agencies out there. So there might be some way that we could help with that.
Thank you. Just for the public's information, too, that when we apply for these grants, we have to be careful that we can complete the grant in a timely manner, because there's a time restraint on those, and if we don't have the resources to complete that, then it makes it difficult to apply for some of those. Chief.
So those are grants that are in the mill, so to speak. Before the council today, one of the options that we have available is we have a 2014 countywide hazardous fuel reduction grant that we're in the second year of. We have funds that are in that grant that we could potentially redirect to projects in Cambria. We would have to go back through and identify the projects that we would not fund or would reallocate monies from to do. But I did earmark a couple up there. We have $24,000 in our countywide chipping project that's currently unallocated, other than we have reserved it for countywide chipping, that we could divert some or all of that to additional work in Cambria. And we also have $15,000 in roadside clearance funding that we could redirect to Cambria and make the roadside clearance projects the focus of our efforts for this grant period. This grant runs through the rest of this calendar year and into, I think, March of 2016 is when it expires. So that's a consideration for the board I would suggest that you give us direction to come back to the executive committee with a proposal and a plan to do that, and then bring it back for you for approval.
But to be clear, I don't believe this could be used on private property for removals or anything like that.
No, it would follow the same criteria that we have in the past, where the property owner could bring the materials to the street, and we could, through our CCC crews that we use to contract with for chipping or private concerns, we could chip the material either back onto the property. We don't really have the provision right now to haul it to, say, Tim Winsor's facility, but doing what we've been doing in the past.
So what's your pleasure? Steve?
Question. I thought I heard earlier that if it was a public nuisance, so let's say that on private property we've got this great big old tree that's dead, and if it falls across one of the primary evacuation routes, we're screwed. Can our funds be used to take care of that specific tree?
We can if we can declare it to be a public nuisance and meet, you know, a set of criteria, because, again, we can use the funds for the community's benefit, and the fact that it's a public nuisance and would potentially endanger the community as a whole meets that criteria. So we'd be okay to do that.
Who makes that determination?
Who's we? Would that be the fire department, the public works? Who's we?
Well, Alan Chief, Peters Chief has got a bullseye on his forehead right there. probably fall into Alan's shop.
Well, I would say as part of this focused inspection program that we're going to do in concert with PGD and CCSD, the first thing we're going to do is the new inspectors that are coming on board, we're going to have them work with PG&E to make sure we know what's a hazard tree, and make sure we know the difference in a power line and a phone line and all that. And then, so once we have our inspectors to where we think they're capable of doing this inspection, our detailed inspection will document every lot with the dead tree as our goal, and we'll have it'll note whether it's a hazard tree or just a random dead tree, and the hazard trees would mean there's some threat to infrastructure, but if it's just a dead tree that's it's an unfortunate landowner burden, but we hope to be able to separate those two based on mostly their standards. But then, a little bit of 4291 thrown in if it's within the first 30 feet. And so,
Alan, I got a question about if we were to do what the grand jury has suggested and to declare an emergency, a state of emergency situation here, would that lend itself to the issue of nuisance overall?
Let me jump in, Supervisor. We don't know all of the benefits of declaring an emergency, and there may be none or very limited amount. I did talk with our Director of Office of Emergency Services, Ron Alsop, yesterday, and you know, the county needs to evaluate is if there is actually a benefit by declaring, as the grand jury report said. And, I mean, there's no use doing something that won't benefit.
Right.
So we already have one emergency declared in this county, and it may be that that umbrella is brought wide enough to be able to do it. So a fire nuisance is, I guess, more difficult. You know, we have a tree on a lot, and we say, is it a fire nuisance to the entire community? I think Public Resources Code would preempt anything like that by saying it's the landowner's responsibility to take care of their clearance near their home. That's the law. We need to really ramp up our inspections and compliance this year on that.
So you're looking for direction, Dan, from the board?
Yeah. Again, my...
I have one comment regarding the... One comment regarding the transferring of some of the countywide funds to Cambria, and that, you know, we can't lose sight that there's problems in Atascadero with the oak trees. There's problems with dying eucalyptus on the Napomo Mesa. Not that they are to the extent that they are here in Cambria, but I just want to make sure that we don't lose sight that there's problems in other parts of the county that we could use this money for.
Yeah, that's why I would suggest that we don't give that direction today, but bring a plan back to the executive committee's next meeting detailing out what the consequences of transferring that money would be.
Jim?
Is that your...
I agree with what Dan just said. You need to look at all the rest of the areas. If you're talking about dead pine trees, you should take a look at the Napomo Park.
Right.
I don't think there's one live pine tree left in that park. If there is, I couldn't find it the other day.
So the suggestion is to bring this back to the executive committee.
I'll make that motion.
There a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, next item. Okay, we just have the consent for the January Board of Directors meeting and the Executive Committee meeting notes. Any questions, comments?
I do.
Yes, sir.
Only on the Executive Committee meeting, the notes. On page 2, apparently CAL FIRE is working to make new maps delineating areas that concern the SRA boundaries in our county. And I notice it says that the CAL FIRE made several recommendations to their regional office to adjust these boundaries. They had some areas to be added and some to be deleted. But it says only the additions were forwarded to the Board of Forestry for consideration. I was wondering, that doesn't sound like a very fair deal for those areas that were going to be deleted. What's going on here? We got to play a level field.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons, for that question. So we submitted our recommendations from this unit to the department. And the department evaluated them on a statewide basis. The recommendations that are being brought to the Board of Forestry, who has control of the map, what is SRA and what is not SRA, they brought forward to the Board of Forestry four changes, only four actually, that were increases to SRA and nothing else for this unit. And if the public has any concerns about that, or the Fire Safe Council, I suppose, then those comments need to be brought now to the Board of Forestry. So that when they do vote on them, they have input from the public. It is a public meeting that the Board of Forestry has.
You sound like a politician.
I'm sorry.
Wait a second. I resemble that. Okay, with that, I need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And Mr. Parsons' comments noted. Okay, we're going to go to item number 7, and Chief or Mr. Turner will give us all of these grant discussions, and then we'll take them all at one time. Okay?
All right, before you have your all the items, item 7 in your package, and I think there's 7A through 7F. These are the various budget components and grants that we have operational at the moment. The first one, 7A, is the grant we just closed out, the 2013 grant. That closed out January 31st, and final reports have been submitted on that, and we're just waiting for closeout documents.
When will we have the documents for that one?
This will be the last time you see that particular grant. The 7B is the grant I mentioned a few minutes ago that we still have working. This is the 2014 countywide grant. We have we're roughly halfway through the performance period on that grant. We're just getting ready to start to ramp up for the spring and summer project work that that grant has funded. The next one is Lake Nacimiento grant, 7C. This project is still pending some property owner approvals and environmental clearance on that property owner approval to do some fuel breaks on the south shore of Lake Nacimiento, particularly focused on the protection of the Community Heritage Ranch, and then some work that's been ongoing around Oak Shores and the boat clubs on the south shore. The item 7D is the Atascadero-Tasajara-Wui grant. We just got all the paperwork concluded on this one to actually initiate work on this grant. This one runs through the end of next year. Most of this work is focused in the area of southwest Atascadero. Yes, southwest Atascadero down through Tasajara Creek area.
I noticed there's been some juggling of grant allocations on this one. For instance, my question is, on the roadside clearing, I noticed it was reduced from originally $53,000 down to $43,000. I was just wondering, why were some of those changes made?
Principal change that was made on this one was to fund the Atascadero chipping program for the year 2015 out of this grant rather than out of the countywide grant. So we were able to take advantage of receiving that other grant.
So just a little in-house juggling, huh?
Yeah, just allows us to free up some funds to do other work within that project area. And then item 7E is the Cooperative Forestry Assistance Agreement, CFAA Park Hill grant. This is a grant that closed out December 31st. We completed that work. All work is done. You may see this one come back because if you look at the very bottom line, there's a negative number there that's of great concern to me. It's the cash in bank is a minus $226,800. So we're still waiting for reimbursements on this grant. And we received no revenue to date on this grant. So we're still waiting on that. And that's how our grants work, is we do the work, pay the expenses, then get reimbursed. This one's still hung up in wherever it's hung up.
I was told Monday payment is moving forward.
Really? Glad to hear that. Is it actually in the mail, as they say? Or
checks in the mail?
It's on the 15th floor.
Well, it could be in our bank post office box. It'd be really good. Thank you, Alan. Alan's been my champion there, lobbying with those folks that are actually paying those bills to move those things along. So thank you again. Okay. And then the last one is item 7F, and that's our operational budget. That's not grant funds, but our Fire Safe Council operational expenditures to date. Any questions on that? I'd be happy to answer.
Any
those.
Questions on any of these? Need a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry on.
And then if we get item 8. Item 8A in your item 8 in your agenda package. This is the CAL FIRE state responsibility area fee funded grant that we were successful on. This performance period begins May 1st, roughly, when we get the contract signed. It goes through March of 2017, roughly 22 months. And this grant is to fund or continue and complete the fuel break work that we started out in the Park Hill area east of Santa Margarita. And it includes doing Calf Canyon, Bellman, Seven Oaks, Little Quail, Rocky Canyon fuel breaks, as well as doing roadside clearance along Highway 58, 229, and some of the county roads, Park Hill, Werewero, Las Palitas, et cetera, in the Park Hill area. A lot of this, as President Meacham mentioned earlier, we have to be careful about the resources, that we don't overcommit resources. So this grant has a lot of funding for masticators. So we did a lot of mastication work out there this last fall, and we expect to continue that work with masticators out in the Park Hill area. It's really well suited to that particular mechanical removal. Very satisfied with the work we had done earlier, and we hope to just keep moving forward with that.
I'm very pleased to see this grant because I live out there. My question is, one of the items they're granting $10,000 for RPF, and I don't know what that means.
I'm sorry.
It's RFP.
Registered Professional Forester.
Yeah. Oh, that's for the forester. Okay.
And these grants require that we have a registered professional forester prepare and sign off on the plan.
That's a job you could do, Roy.
I don't qualify.
Okay, that was just an information item. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nomination for an alternate director?
Yes. Supervisor Patterson couldn't be here today. He's out of town. But he would like to nominate an alternate to serve in the Environmental Community Representative. And Holly, you want to step up to the podium there? Jim has nominated Holly Slatlund to be the alternate in that position, and I'll put you on the spot and maybe ask you to give a little bit of your background.
What are you going to do about Cambria, by the way?
Well, actually, I fully expect that Jim is going to be at most of these meetings, but I am happy to help out wherever I can. Actually, the Fire Safe Council has definitely been on my radar lately because I've been working with Dan and with Alan on the Cambria Forest in conjunction with Green Space and Fiscalini Ranch. But I also think about fire all the time because I live in Templeton right off of Jack Creek and 46, and all it would take is a cigarette butt to start that, which hasn't burned in 60 years. So fire is something that we take very seriously, but at the same time, at our home and in projects that I hear about, I have been an environmentalist for many, many years, so I think it's important to balance the needs of native plant communities and wildlife whenever we're looking at reducing fire risk as well. So as far as my background, I'm early retired from Cal Poly and have been working with various environmental groups in the county for the last 10 years. I currently sit on the board of the California Native Plant Society and the Morro Bay National Estuary Program, but I've served on probably every environmental group in the county, I think, at one time or another. Okay. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. So what do we need to do with that? So I need a motion to approve the nomination. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Welcome. Earth Day.
So item number 10 on the agenda is the Earth Day event. It's coming up on Sunday, April 19th, again at El Churro Regional Park. Jim Patterson is looking for volunteers to help him staff the booth. This is the 25th anniversary of Earth Day in San Luis Obispo County. So the Fire Safe Council has had a booth there for a long time. I can't tell you how many years, but maybe 15 of our existence. And we should be right across from the new Fire Safe Demonstration Gardens there at the Botanical Gardens. So it'd be a great opportunity for us to see that and celebrate that that completion of that project.
So if anybody wants to volunteer or you want to think about that, then email Dan, let him know, and go from there.
Yep. Again, Sunday, April 19th, I believe it's one day, and it's from 10 in the morning to 5. And typically, you know, you work 2 or 3 hour shifts, and we rotate people through. It's a long day to stand out there in the probably the sun. Maybe we get lucky to be raining. You know? But
if only.
If only.
Okay.
So for the good of the order, any other comments, questions? Yes, sir.
Hello, Council. I'd like to, I'm pleased to announce to you that we've applied for a state grant that was internal to CAL FIRE, and we were successful. One of the things that we're going to get from that was a $15,000 allocation to reprint three of our pre-attack plans. One of them will be in the Cambria area, where we receive 3,000 new pre-attack plans for resources coming into the area. And additionally, I wanted to bring to the attention of the council also our evacuation plan that is for public consumption that we send out, as you heard earlier, about the flyers that go out with the water bill. Additionally, you have sent these out to the residents of Cambria. These are depleted. We originally printed 6,000 of them. We distributed of them, and then a box of, I think, 300 went to each fire station, and they are gone. So they will need your consideration at some point if you would like to redistribute those. And then we also received another $5,000 to continue with the RTA bus ads. I don't know if you've seen them. On the sides of the RTA buses, there is a One Less Spark. That is a CAL FIRE-funded, SRAE-funded public service announcement, and that will continue again this year. I know that's Roy's favorite project right there. Or we could put it in the Tribune, Roy, either way. Those are my comments. Thank you.
We have Roy's picture on the side of the bus.
Yeah, we can put your picture, Roy, in the Tribune. All right. Anyway, thank you so much.
Okay, sure. Who's going to talk about that? Oh, Chief, you going to be talking about the tour?
Chief Veneris, could you come up and line people out for the tour, you and Chief Miller, maybe?
One thing I was going to mention before, Dan, before you run out, in the last executive committee meeting, we talked about the possibility of could the county be the one to help with a bridge loan, because some of the monies that we get, we don't get them in time, and we have to pay it out. So I did check with the county, and at first they said they thought they could, and then the more they looked into it, realized that they can't. And I don't know the reasoning why they can't. I'm not good at can't, but...
Something to do with the Constitution, state constitution, I guess, is what I was told. But I have been in contact with the Heritage Oaks Bank, and they're receptive. So I'm preparing a document package for them, for their loan officers to look at to see. Had a very good conversation with them, and they, even though, as I told them on the conversation with them, we don't even own a pencil. So we have absolutely no assets to put up collateral, and we're not going to ask anybody to sign away their personal collateral either. So they said, okay, we'll get past that. So they're open to the discussion of a bridge loan to for this CAL FIRE grant that we're getting. It's $300-some thousand if we don't want another $226,000 in the whole phenomenon occurring to us. So
12 months interest-free.
Yeah. We don't know yet.
Okay, we'll keep working on that. Chief Miller? Or...
Thank you. Probably didn't hear I said good evening then. Great. Good morning, members of the council. My name is Phil Veneris. I'm the battalion chief here in San Luis Obispo for the North Coast. I was asked to put together a tour for you if you're so inclined to go see it with Chief Miller. We have a couple of things we could show you if there's an interest. Probably a good thing to look at would be driving north on Highway 1 to San Simeon and looking at the Pico Stand. It's a real good representation of the forest and the health of the forest, and you don't have to get off out of the car. We can pull off the side of the road, take a peek at it. After that, we drive back. We had a small fire next to Lemert probably 3 or 4 years ago, 2 or 3, 4 acres. It's grown back, and what the forest looks like after that fire, it's a real good representation of a good, healthy forest. And then from there, we're looking at a piece of land up above Cambria. It's part of the Bridge Street project. We've done some recent burning on there, some clearing, just to show you that maintenance and what the the shaded fuel break looks like. Then after that, the fourth thing is, as you drive out of here, there's a real good stand to look at. It will be on Highway 1 across from the Caltrans yard at 46 and Highway 1. It's basically a north-facing slope with 75 to 80, 85% mortality. Of course, that's a do-it-yourself part of the tour, and you can do that if you choose to do the guided tour or not. So if there is interest to a guided tour, we'd be happy to show you. If not, at least take a peek at that section as you head out. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Dan had to go get something. Any comments, anything else further? Yes, sir. You say 9,000 acres?
About 9,000 acres. In the past few years, they've tried to do that, but there hasn't been much to do.
That award for Nathan.
Last year, they only had the meeting, and he wasn't there, so I was late to the day. Before that, they always divided up the ranges into more manageable bites. But they've had a lot of issues, and they just can't do that anymore with live ordinance all over the place. So they come to this one-day spread burn project. So it might be a really good project. They're working with us to try to get good weather forecasting and try to get it done on the best weather day, as opposed to if they don't do it, the troops come in to train and light off a wildfire on a really bad air quality day, it could be lots worse. So kind of trying to balance all that.
Will the U.S. government honor there's a fire somewhere on Palmer Hill and will they honor that?
That'll be taken into consideration for sure. They don't have to. They don't necessarily have to.
Yeah, I get the phone calls every time they have a big fire out there in my district, but my dad used to be fire chief at Hunter Liggett. He says, the darn Army starts fires all the time. And I said, well, Dad, if they didn't do that, then you wouldn't have anything to do. But okay, what else do we have, Mr. Turner?
We just have to confirm on the dates of the next executive committee meeting. Tentatively, it will be scheduled for Thursday, April 23rd, which is the fourth Thursday. And I believe that might be a conflict with Mr. Harrison.
That's
So we're looking for an alternate date on that. And then the full board of directors would meet May 20th and looking for a location if you have a particular interest in a specific location for that one. So is the executive committee, is there an alternate date for Thursday, April 23rd?
Phone with me, it's in my pickup. I don't know.
I can just query you via email if you want and set that. But right now we'll try to move it away from April 23rd to some alternate date. Okay. And then the full board, May 20th, would be the third Wednesday in May. And we don't have a specific location picked out. Is there a desire to try to hold it in any specific location.
How about the EOC, the Emergency Operations Center? County facility on Highway 1?
Can we do that?
Yeah, we could try.
Yeah. Okay. Let's try that.
As an alternate, I would suggest you could all come over to Barcelona, Spain at my hotel room. So.
Boo.
We'll appoint you to something while you're gone. Okay. With that, we will adjourn to the tour. For all of you that want to do that, other than that, we adjourn.